Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. It's Friday, the greatest day ever invented. We are thrilled you're listening and hope you call in or text in at 312-981-7200. You came in just a little bit shaken up this morning, didn't you?
I think I saw a drug deal go down.
Oh, no.
In broad daylight. And I don't
Were
know
you
my...
waiting in line or what was,
no.
why are you shaking up?
For people
up?
Who don't know, you live in a Starsky and Hutch episode. A lot of people aren't aware of that.
All right. Don't tell anyone that I'm living with Huggy Bear.
I'm not going to say anything.
Explains the clothes.
You know what? He dresses better than I do.
Why do you think you saw a drug deal?
Well, it's so weird. I didn't know what to do. I really thought, should I call 911? And I didn't, so I'm a bad citizen.
Mm.
But, you know, have you ever seen Jay and Silent Bob where they're just standing on the outside of a building?
Yes.
There was a dude who was just standing on the outside of a building.
Yes.
On a corner. Let me just say they sell rabbit there. That's all I'm going to say because anyone who drives in.
They sell rabbit? What does that
mean?
It's
an interesting little grocery store that sells rabbit, and I'm intrigued by it. So that's the location, police officers.
Yeah. I didn't know that was an option.
I shouldn't have said that because you have a bunny.
I know.
It's not your rabbit.
All right. Either way, I didn't know you could do that.
So there's this dude standing there, this white dude with a baseball cap on, and just standing against the building, very much like Jay and Silent Bob, where they just would stand outside the convenience store. So he's standing there, and some black dude walks by, and I see them. At first, I thought they were fist bumping, but I saw an exchange of something.
What was exchanged? Was it money for drugs? Because that's a drug deal right there.
I think they each exchanged something, and then the black dude kept walking, and the white dude was just standing there just with his back against the wall. And to me, I'm like, that couldn't have been a drug deal, because wouldn't they disperse? Why would that guy keep standing there?
Well, he didn't ask for a receipt or anything?
You are so cute.
I haven't been involved in that many drug deals. I'm not sure. There's no paperwork. There's nothing to prove that it happened.
I don't know. Maybe they're friends and they were just exchanging numbers, but it looked very suspect to me.
Oh, man.
And I didn't. Is that my civic duty to call?
No, you got to yell citizen's arrest and you got to bring these people to justice.
I would not be here right now if that's what I did.
Well, I've not been involved in enough similar activity.
I've never seen anything like that before. It was just so.
Was there eye contact with the two?
Not really. It was kind of just like their hands met, and one kept walking.
That is a little bit
in broad daylight.
Yeah. Maybe they were KGB or CIA.
No way.
There's a chance
of
that. That could have been it.
Although if they were trying to go undercover, they were very undercover. So that would have been a good way to go.
What is microfiche, by the way, Steve?
You don't know what that is?
Really little tiny
fish. I just learned
fish.
What Swedish fish were about a month ago. I didn't know what those were.
Have you been to a library in the last 30 years?
Well, they wouldn't have been there in the last 30 years, but before then.
Oh, is that the... I know what that is now. So I didn't know that's
like,
what it was called.
It's like an overhead projector, but a microscopic overhead projector.
Right.
And you look through it to find stuff from magazines
I remember
from
that. That's
days
from
of yore.
Right, I remember now. I think you just made the drug problem in this country worse by not taking these guys in.
I am being 100% honest. What do you do? I wasn't going to call because I don't know if that's what was going on, but it looked very weird and just in the wide open.
Now, you know that I don't know if you know this. I know that you'll make fun of me for this because everyone who knows the story makes fun of me for this. Years ago, Terry and I, this is before we had the girls, we lived in an apartment. And our landlady knocked on the door one day. It was just she and I. My wife was not at home. And she said, I have to show you something. And I said, what do you need to show me? And she gave me the whisper sign, shh, like that. And I go, okay, what do you need to show me? So she took me downstairs to the laundry room where behind some old bottles, some glass bottles, was a bag of white powder. And she said, what is this? And I looked at it and I said, that is cocaine. That is a bag of cocaine. And she said, what do we do now? And I said, we take this to the authorities. Someone in this building is dealing cocaine, and we have to stop this. So she and I drove to the police station. We showed it to them, where they explained to us that
it was
Tide.
I was just going to say, powdered detergent.
It was Tide. And they said, you can tell because cocaine does not have those little cleaning crystals in it, those little off-colored cleaning crystals.
That's why I stopped using cocaine to clean my clothes.
Boy, your laundry was expensive.
But it wasn't even clean.
Quarters? We need hundreds.
They thanked us, and then I did a quick...
I looked
over my shoulder as we were walking out, and one of the guys was on the floor laughing, because I guess we were the first person to turn in Tide at that particular police station.
It was by the washing machine, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, but it was hidden behind some bottles, which I guess you would do if you didn't want anyone to steal your Tide.
Right.
But still, apparently, here in Illinois, it's perfectly legal to have a bag of Tide in the laundry room. I didn't know that at the time.
You guys are so cute. I can't believe you drove that to the police station.
Yeah, we took it into the police station, and she expected a reward of some sort, but they weren't handing out awards that day. Rewards or awards.
Drug deal. I don't know if that's what I saw, but it, you know, I'm a
sounds
little
like
innocent
a drug deal.
708-er. And
sounds
I,
like it.
Terry, you've seen something like this?
I did. I was in Washington, D.C. on business, and right in front of the FBI building.
Because we think about it, though, if you're a drug dealer, who's going to suspect you're doing it right in front of the FBI building?
Right.
Maybe that's a safe space. Maybe they're not looking right in front of the building. I don't know.
What did you do about this?
Well, I was on my own, and they saw me see it, so I went into the closest establishment, which is a liquor store, right? Right next door.
Yeah.
And promptly bought myself a something. I don't know, some kind of beverage. I don't remember what it was. But I was kind of nervous because I was staying there on my own, and I didn't know if they were going to follow me to my hotel
sure.
or what. But
I made eye contact with the dealer because
no.
I looked at him and I did the, you know, pointing to my two
you.
Eyes and pointing back at him.
You.
I'm watching you, buddy. I didn't do that.
I think I made accidental eye contact just as you're passing someone on the sidewalk.
Oh, no.
And you're laughing, but yeah, that's when it occurred to me what was happening. And yeah, it's kind of scary.
It's very scary.
And plus, just in broad day, I mean, I am so naive. I get that.
Well, drug dealers, I'm guessing, have 24-hour service. I wouldn't think they would
just... But go in an alley.
Yeah, you would imagine.
Although that's where the police are looking for you.
Right.
That's what I'm thinking. The FBI building might be a safe place, but they're not looking for you out
there. Do it in front of the police station. That's
maybe,
my tip.
Maybe the clients are working in the FBI building.
Oh, that could be it.
Thank you, Terry. Have a great weekend.
All right, a quick break and then more stories of this nature. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
1 out of 12, 1 out of 12, 211 in progress. 1 out of 12, handle code 3.
While on the way to work this morning, I saw a 211, a 420.
Did you see a 211?
I don't know. I'm sure it wasn't pot, so it's not a 420. It was a B-52. Let's
just
say that.
Was it one of the B-52s was involved in this?
Two people on the street, one leaning against a building, another dude walking by, and they exchanged something in their hands in broad daylight and then kept walking. That's what I thought was so weird, because if they were just doing a fist bump or shaking
right.
hands, there would have been some convo going.
It's track season at the high school. Are you sure they weren't exchanging a baton?
Maybe a phone number?
Could have been
quickly.
Any of those
Hey,
things.
Man, here's my number. See you later.
It can't relay? Be drugs, Wendy, because El Chapo is behind bars. There's no more drug activity.
Well, I didn't know what to do. I didn't call the police. And, Charlie, what do you do in this situation? You've been in this situation?
I used to work on the west side, and if I took the main thoroughfare to get the expressway, it took me forever, so I'd take side streets.
That's what I do. I think we've been on the same side street, Charlie.
Mm-hmm. Could be. The first couple of days I went down there on the side street, there's dealers all over the place. There's young ladies all over the place. You know, hey, you know, what do you... After about 4 days, they got to know that, you know, I wasn't interested in any product. They'd wipe by, hey, how you doing today, man? What's going on? You know, wait, you know, and this was every day.
Hmm. During broad daylight?
Anywhere from 3:30 to 6 o'clock at night.
All right, well, this was like, you know, 8:30 in the morning.
Right.
Or 9:30.
Yeah, you know, same thing. I mean, this is the middle of the afternoon.
That's wild.
You know, these guys are out. These people are out there every day. This was Monday through Saturday, and they're always out there.
At least they're nice, and you know, I usually
yeah,
wave. I got to know the one dude who was at the Eisenhower giving away or selling, not giving away papers.
Yes,
Frank. I said hi to him every morning. I bring him an Egg McMuffin every once in a while.
That's
yeah,
kind
you
of you.
Know the people and stuff. You know, I mean, I never stopped for a beer with these guys, but you know, we. You know, you get to know them. So, but I mean, in You can't tell me that the police didn't know these guys were there.
They have to
know.
Yeah,
that's why I feel okay that I didn't call.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all right, say you bust one dealer. It, no offense, but overall, big picture, what's that going to do?
Nothing. You're right, Charlie. Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Stay safe driving in. Pam, so I did the right thing not calling the police, correct?
Wendy, you and I have got to get together because I
for a drug deal?
Now, I live in Brookfield, but I've lived Chicago all my life, right? South Side Chicago. And you see a drug deal going, so what are you going to do? You know what ends up happening? Well, I think I saw this. I suspected that. And then in my mind was going this Black Sabbath, paranoid. Now, here's the thing. If you see somebody getting beat, somebody getting stabbed, then you make sure you call.
You are right, Pam.
They're doing their thing, man. Either they're going to be dealt with now or, you know, God will deal with them later on. But
amen, sister.
It's making us like go, I sit on the train sometimes. I drive downtown. I go, and it'll be like, if you see anything, you suspect anything, what is happening? We're getting frozen here. We care about people. If they want to do their secret deals, like O.J., for instance, drive around.
All comes
around
back to O.J.
Was O.J. there? You didn't see O.J. there.
Not today.
Yeah, but love you guys.
Thank you, Pam. And have a great weekend.
Pam, you too. You too. Bye.
Thank you so much. So just let them be.
Well, why wouldn't you? You're a mom. Why didn't you pull these guys aside and give
and
them a
slap
stern,
them?
No, a stern talking to and explain to them how drugs will ruin their lives.
You could
I've
ask
seen
them
how this picture ends, my friends.
So you want a solo show? Is that what you're saying?
I didn't say that. I like that you said that they were well behaved. That was my best. Hey, drug dealers, be well behaved, please. Be pleasant.
Patty, I didn't know what to do. I'm such a naive little 708-er.
Well, I just figured you just keep on going about your business because I was once on, like, this near Chicago and Western going to band practice, and I have my gig. I park. I've got my gig bag and all my junk, my guitar, and I turn around about three car lengths from me. There's a guy with a trunk open and another guy. And there's all these guns, like three or maybe four or five really big guns in the back.
Wow.
All right, that would freak me out.
Yeah, I thought this could end probably two ways, you know.
Yes.
So I thought, well, I'm just going to pretend like I belong and it's like something I see all the time. So I just got my crap together and kept on going and went to where I was going and thought, okay, I made it.
Yeah, guns scare me. Drugs don't scare me as much, sorry, because they don't shoot at me. I have to shoot at myself.
That's true, too. Yeah. Wow, that's ugly, Patty. Well, I'm glad you're still here.
And glad they're right, too, again.
And what band are you in? Go ahead and plug your band.
Well, we don't play that much anymore. We're called the Booze Hags, like a couple old drunks.
The Booze Hags.
I should be in that band.
You should. I've thought that often with that voice. You should.
Well, thanks, Patty.
Have a good
care.
One. Booze Hags coming to a venue near
something
you.
Something sort of similar, not quite as extreme, happened to me once.
What happened, Kevin?
Just gotten a brand new bass guitar. It was like my baby. Very expensive, and I was, you know.
Your custom made one?
Yes, absolutely. So we had a practice space also, and it wasn't to the point where I would leave the bass there. I wasn't comfortable with that yet. So every day I would take it to and from practice with me, and I'd just put it in my buddy's back seat, and we sit down in the car, and all of a sudden some guy opens the back seat door. I just hear it open, and then I hear like a, oh, man. I look back, and I think what had happened was the kid just mistook the car that I was in for like his buddy's car.
Right.
And was maybe a little bit on the influence of something because he just like stood there staring at it for a second. I had to like get out. And the second I like got out and like stood in front of him, he's like, "Oh, sorry, sorry, sorry," but it freaked me out. Freaked
but didn't
me out
you
time.
Feel good at the end of it because he went, "Oh man, like you made the right choice with your custom job."
yeah,
absolutely. Wow.
Unlike Bill's bikes, which we learned yesterday, their building got robbed and the thief took every bike except yours and your wife's.
Still feel bad about that. I
do. Should have gotten a custom job.
Did they leave the Tide on top of the seat?
No, that was a separate incident, Steve. That was separate. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve will give you the news, and then, boy, do we have a lot on today's show. It's Bill and Wendy WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. On the way in to work today...
Were you on Lakeshore Drive?
I did take Lakeshore Drive today. And whilst on it...
Thank you, Bob Shakespeare.
I have never sounded more Shakespearean than I just did for those 5 seconds.
Can I just tell you that song right there, Eliota Haynes, Jeremiah, Lakeshore Drive? Every time you hear that song, you think summer,
mm-hmm.
don't you?
Yeah. And Lakeshore Drive is open year-round, so why do we equate that song with summer? I don't know why.
But it just screams summer to
me.
Yeah,
it does.
It's a great cartoon.
They were explaining, you know, Matt Bubala is on, he does these DNA info reports during the morning show, and he said, and I believe him, that this is the 30th anniversary of the demolition of the S-curve that was part of Lakeshore Drive.
I remember it.
It was, I hope you'll agree with me, it was the scariest part of any roadway anywhere near the city, isn't it? Wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I remember being a fresh driver,
mm-hmm.
not fresh like you'd have to slap me, but being new to it,
mm-hmm.
and the first time I did the S-curve was really a white-knuckler for me,
yeah.
yet very cool.
Yeah.
And I trusted myself, but the problem was I never trusted anyone else to stay in their lanes.
Right.
And
well,
there
people
were,
didn't stay
I
in
know,
their lanes.
I know, accidents aplenty.
You almost couldn't. I mean, it was, right, there were right-hand turns. There were... Nine degree
so
turns.
What? You can't turn right?
Not at 30 miles an hour. I mean, it's difficult.
It's a major thoroughfare. It's not like it was a little street in a suburb or something. That's a heavy traffic area.
And you're looking at the lake.
From the weirdest thing I've ever seen in a road.
It was, wasn't it? And people said, many people used to call it the Z curve, not even the S curve, because an S is a softer turn, but that was just
right.
as deliberate, and there were two of them, of course, and
it was cool. I felt like Speed Racer every time I went down it.
But remember how, like, as you would approach it from either side, you'd be able to be doing 40-45 miles an hour, and then once you got on there, you could do six. You couldn't go much faster than 6 miles an hour, or you'd be dead.
That's when the video games really helped me become a better driver, because I would practice at home after a good game of Pong.
Yeah.
I would drive, what was the pit stop, I think it was called.
Yeah.
And then I could master the Z-curve.
Or Night Driver.
So I didn't hear Matt's story, but it was 30 years ago today?
30 years ago this week
that
they demolished the S-curve and turned it into what it is now. Do they still? They don't still call it an S-curve there, do they?
I don't think so.
It's kind of constructed
the curve.
There. Just
it's
the curve.
It's still pretty dangerous and curvy, but nowhere near what it
Nothing
was.
Nothing like what
well,
it used to be.
Well, it wasn't even curvy. That's the thing.
No.
Yeah, you're right.
No, it was like you said, it was two straight right angles. Before I could drive, when I was a little kid... When we lived in the southwest suburbs, when we lived in Oak Forest, my grandmother lived in Rogers Park. So we would be about once a week, we would take that route. And this was before I could drive. It made me not want to ever drive because I thought at some point, no matter how good of a driver I am, I'll have to navigate this. And I don't think I'll be able to do it. I was able to do it. But when you're a kid, I used to ask my dad, how are you able to do this? It's too dangerous.
You guys, I remember driving. I mean, I didn't go downtown a lot being a suburbanite, but, you know, sometimes we'd go with the girls downtown for something.
Yeah.
And I remember I had to turn the radio down.
Really?
I'm not kidding, because it was like, guys.
Right.
And this is like as a young driver.
You would need 100% of your mind to navigate it. It says if you think drive, and this is on DNA Info, by the way, dnainfo.com. If you think driving on Lakeshore Drive as it passes through downtown is a mess, then you never drove on the infamous Z-patterned curve that connected the north and south sections of the roadway, and that was 3 decades ago. 30 years ago, a new gentler curve replaced the now infamous section of the drive just south of the Chicago River. The new section replaced a curve that John LaPlante, a city traffic engineer at the time, said was more like a Z-pattern and a traffic disaster.
Boy, was it beautiful and picturesque.
Well, if you'll remember, and I was showing, you know, Kevin is younger than this. Our producer Kevin has no recollection of this because he wasn't born yet. So we were looking at pictures of it earlier, and it was very industrial around that area. It wasn't, I mean, it was picturesque in that you could look and see the lake, and that was beautiful. But where the S-curve was itself was really pretty industrial.
Yeah, I've never known it like that.
And it wasn't soft. Like, now you look around
it's well manicured now. There's nice lawns and trees. But back then, you could just look and go, I hope one day there's a giant Ferris wheel right over there. That's like, all you could do.
It was like you were driving through industrial waste to get to Lake Point
That's
Tower.
That's it. That's it, exactly.
Lake Point Tower was there, and there was nothing between that sort of in Michigan Avenue almost.
Right.
That's true.
And, Steve, was Lake Point Tower where there was some enclosed swimming pool that you could see from the S-curve? Was that at Lake Point Tower, or was that somewhere else?
You know, it sounds a little familiar. I don't know. But as a kid, I remember driving up through there and going by Lake Point Tower and saying, oh, I'm going to live there one day.
I said that, too.
That's where the rich people live.
Right. When will we live there? We could be roommates. We'll never be there, will we, Steve?
So, you know, you just quoted John LaPlante.
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe it's the same John LaPlante then who went on to sort of become the fall guy under Mayor Daley for the breach in the underground tunnels
in
the Chicago
River.
You
know, I think it is the same guy.
Yeah, he was a career transportation guy in the city.
I think it is. Now, the pool, Wendy is showing me photographs of it.
We should put this on our live blog. You can go to WGNradio.com/Bill and Wendy.
The picture you're showing me is a black and white picture in a very high up aerial view.
They didn't have color photography back
then. They were dreaming of it, but it wasn't a reality yet. But there, at DNA Info, they have at least one and I think two colored pictures. No, I think just one. Color pictures that show the S-curve. And you can see how really industrial it was. And I'm trying to remember if you can see that swimming pool I'm referring to. All I remember is it was a glass enclosed pool. And so many people I knew that when you were taking the S-curve and seeing that pool would point out that that's the pool that Johnny Weissmuller learned to swim in. And I don't know if that's true or not, or if that's just a tall tale that Chicagoans would tell. But at least a half a dozen people over the years would point at that pool and they'd go, you know, Johnny Weissmuller from the Olympics and Tarzan, he learned to swim in that pool.
Well, the building's not that old, is it?
I don't think it is.
No.
I'm almost positive it isn't.
And, you know, it was very industrial. I kind of don't remember it because I was just in awe of Lake Michigan. Because as you're driving there and you'd look at the lake, it really looked like our ocean. I'm sorry. It still does to this day to me.
That took your focus. But as you were approaching it from either side, from the north or the south, and you looked down, I remember there were always like all kinds of towers of tires that were blown out tires and stuff. You know what I mean? Like that kind of a look where right. It was like the city just gave up on that area.
Well, looking at the picture, and under Lakeshore Drive looked like a parking lot for semis, like a loading zone.
Well, I think I'm almost positive that that was like a car pound or something under there, wasn't it, Steve? Does that make sense?
This picture has semis lined up like at a dock.
Oh, they do? Okay.
Yeah, because weren't they getting products from barges and stuff?
Oh, probably. Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah, because the pound has been under the... I don't know where that
Where's
is.
Where's the pound?
It's like I-55 where it meets 90-94, sort of. The pound has been there, I think, for quite some time.
Now, the one that I'm thinking of, there was something that was closer to...
You're right. It'd be right about there, Bill.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Again, back to DNA Info, many people could not make that turn, the S-curve, the infamous S-curve turn, especially if the weather was bad, said John LaPlante, who's now retired and a Lincoln Square resident. The bends were at more than 90 degrees. So if everybody could pull out their protractor for just a little bit and take a look at what a 90-degree bend is, think about you driving a car. And like I said, just before getting there, you're doing 40 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden you're slowed down to 3 or 4 or 5 miles an hour within seconds.
Well, at least they had the flashing yellow curve sign.
Yeah, they did.
Curve
to show
ahead.
To show you how dangerous it is.
It was terrible. Are you thinking of Harbor Point? They're saying that they have like the one of the largest and deepest indoor pools found in a Chicago residential building. Was that around?
If I could see the picture of it.
I just have the location, Harbor Point off of Lakeshore Drive.
It's possible, but I don't think – I'm looking at the map you're showing me. It's in that vicinity, but it's very possible it wasn't called Harbor Point back then. I think it was either a hotel or an apartment. I'm almost positive.
Well, someone may know the answer, and people want to talk about their Lakeshore Drive horror stories and beauty stories. So 312-981-7200, Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
We found out earlier from DNAinfo.com that this is the 30th anniversary of the demolition of the S-curve. It was certainly one of the most dangerous roadways anywhere near Chicagoland, and it's a whole lot safer now, thank you very much. But a lot of people are calling in to remember how dangerous it was, and to help me remember what the swimming pool is that you could see from the old S-curve. It was an enclosed, domed-in pool, and legend tells us that Johnny Weissmuller learned to swim there, although the years don't quite add up. I can't see how that's possible.
And I never heard that story. This was just going on in your family circles.
I remember my dad telling me. I remember several relatives and friends.
Again, related one to time, your dad.
Well, but here's one that wasn't. We went on a field trip to the old Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum in Old Town when I was in, I think, 4th grade or 5th grade. And the bus driver pointed that out.
Was the bus driver your dad?
Yeah. My dad was the bus driver. And I remember a chorus of kids of 4th graders all saying in unison, "Who is Johnny Weissmuller?"
All right. Well, we have people that have varying stories. Stuart, you think you know the pool that was visible from Lakeshore Drive?
Yeah. Hi, Bill. Hi, Wendy. Nice to talk to you.
Hey, Stuart.
I'm pretty sure if you were heading south on Lakeshore Drive, it was on the right-hand side, and it was a Holiday Inn. And it was like a, almost like a big greenhouse, all glass enclosed.
That's sounding sort of familiar,
Boy,
I have to admit.
Was it the Holiday Inn?
I actually got kind of a funny story. Well, it wasn't funny at the time, but I negotiated the S-curve, but right after that, where you hit the Oak Street Beach curve,
yeah.
I fell asleep at the wheel and crashed my car into a telephone pole, or a light pole, actually.
That's terrible.
I ended up in the hospital down there, but I'm okay now.
You shouldn't sleep in your car, Stuart.
Yeah, I know. I tried not to. I was trying to get home, but, you know, I was tired. But I believe I also heard that the gentleman who designed the S-curve
killed himself.
Suicide.
The other legend.
Yeah, I thought I heard that.
That's the other legend, but I can't. I've looked that up online several times. I can't find any evidence, but people would always toss that in.
Another thing about that area, you're talking about how it's kind of blighted and stuff. Back in the mid to late 70s, I was a sound engineer for a lot of the Chicago rock and roll bands, and that's where they had the original Chicago Fest before it became Taste of Chicago.
Right.
Sure.
And it was on Navy Pier, and the bands I worked for would always be playing the Rock Around the Dock at the far end of the pier.
I remember that.
You'd have to walk through underneath Navy Pier, and it was like you were kicking the rats out of your way and stuff. And it was just, it was scary. It's like, I think I saw drug deals going down like Wendy saw, too. But
sure.
The rats were doing drug deals.
Yeah, I think so. But, yeah, it was, and it's just amazing. If you look at it now, who would have ever thought it would look like
they
that?
They cleaned it up, didn't they?
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Thanks so much,
Wendy,
Stuart.
To be honest with you. All right, you guys have a great day. I love listening to your show.
Thank
Rock
you, Stuart.
On. Thank
Take
you.
Care. That's what a rough neighborhood we lived in back then. The rats were doing drug deals. The cops looked the other way.
Nancy, it wasn't the Holiday Inn in your memory, was it? Hey, Nancy.
Hey.
It wasn't the Holiday Inn in your memory?
Yeah, and really it's not my memory. We're in the car, and I'm with someone who's quite the history buff, and he is pretty
sure.
Is
he too much of a baby to call himself, Nancy? Can't he call himself?
He's driving.
Oh, okay.
I bet he's driving.
He's driving. He's being sure. very responsible, not talking and driving.
So what does he say it is if it's not the Holiday Inn? Where was that pool?
The Hotel Intercontinental.
Is that what it was?
On Michigan Avenue.
Yeah?
Yeah.
On Michigan, how could you see it from Lakeshore Drive then?
No, you couldn't, just the story that's where he learned to swim.
That's
where Johnny Weissmuller learned.
You could see that from, especially then, you could have seen it from Lakeshore Drive.
Because it would have been open. There wouldn't have been any buildings obscuring it back then.
All right.
That's possible.
Tell your friend, boyfriend, husband, significant other, thank you.
Certainly will.
Have a good weekend.
He's shy. That's all right.
Another story here. Pete, what do you know about? It's pool talk with Bill Leff.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. regarding the pool that you're referring to, Bill, that was, I believe it was attached to Harborside Towers or Harbor View Towers. Harbor Point.
Is that it?
I can recall it because they had, back before they developed that whole area, that Streeterville area, they had a driving range down there just after they cleared out all the railroad tracks. It was unimproved land. And you could literally stand in the tee box, and if you had the right club, you could drive golf balls and bounce them off the dome of the swimming pool.
Really?
Wow. That's probably the only reason I remember it. But
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was, and I couldn't understand why they continued to have the driving range open.
Right.
You know?
That's a recipe for disaster. That can't play well.
Pete, we found this online. Harbor Point, it was built in 1974, and the thing that brought me to this, it said the indoor pool is one of the largest and deepest found in a Chicago residential building. Sunlight pours in above the pool from the large domed skylight,
that has to be it. That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can, and with golf balls bouncing off of it, and
it's more exciting.
And,
boy, that's big hail. Hail, yes. Pete, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Pete.
All right, you guys.
Take care.
Love your show.
Thank you,
sir. Thank you so much. So Hotel Intercontinental was perhaps the pool that Johnny Weissmuller swam.
learned to swim in.
Dipped his toes into.
Right.
And Harbor Point was the one with the big dome thing that you could see in and look.
All right. That makes more sense. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Thanks, everybody, for joining in on that. A break, some news from Steve, and then more show ahead, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Leffin, it's Wendy Snyder. On Fridays, we get a visit from our friend Kurt Wagner. He's the man who runs TVshowpatrol.com, one of your best sources for TV information, TVshowpatrol.com. And today, it's not just you critiquing television. You have brought a friend of yours, a fellow television critic, correct?
Yes. Amory Cunningham from MyTakeOnTV.com. And Philadelphia's here. We're going to see 2E2 this weekend.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. That starts today.
Mm-hmm. Very, very nice. I want to flash back to last week toward the end of the program. I was saying that there's a show that is custom made for you, Wendy, and that's the show Vinyl on HBO.
Are you setting me up because I can't say my quote on the air?
I think you can say it. Go ahead. Say what you just said off air. You're fine.
I said I flippin' love it.
Yes. Yes. This show, there's in the history of television, I don't think they've ever made a show that's more perfect for you. I knew you would love this show. But, Kurt, as we were saying, for some reason, despite Martin Scorsese's presence, it's not getting a lot of viewers for
some
reason.
Yeah, it's not doing as well as they had hoped it would. And I don't know that the critical, do you remember what the critics were saying about it?
I feel like everybody was saying it's an okay show.
Yeah. Mixed reviews.
Kind of lukewarm, yeah.
Yeah.
But see, I am a radio junkie, and I got into radio, music radio, and it's just that happened before my time.
Right.
But I witnessed a little of that. But that's what happened. You'd have to sign these no payola things, and that's how records got played.
Right.
Who had the best drugs? Who could give you the best party or something?
Yeah.
I think it's really good, and I love seeing the depiction of all the rock and rollers.
Mm-hmm.
Mick Jagger's son looks just like him.
Yeah, and Mick Jagger is a producer on the show, so a lot of it has to, you know.
I think it's superb, and if
comes
you like
from experience,
music history and radio history, you will love it. If you're not, I think it's a very niche audience.
Yeah,
and
it
is. The history of coke snorting and
that was the original title. They
exactly.
changed it the last minute.
I've never seen anybody rip a rearview mirror off. Can I just say that?
Oh.
What about a cassette case?
If he was more
Jeez,
resourceful.
An 8-track, anything.
I just read a piece where they were talking about how HBO is in a weird state of flux right now because over the years, they've always had one or two or three hits running at the same time. But right now, only John Oliver's show is really doing fairly decent business.
Well, Game
for
of
them.
Thrones.
And Game of Thrones, right. Of course. I'm sorry.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And
Girls coming to an end next year. So, really, that's kind of going down. And
yeah.
Right. And I think there's, I don't know what's going on there, what's creative wise. I don't know if the way that they're deciding what shows to pick up and stuff has changed or if they're, you know, I don't know if they're more hands off or whatever, but it does seem like they flail a little bit here and there.
Now, I don't know if we discussed this, but Deadwood, which was a huge hit for them several years ago, and they had promised us when Deadwood went off the air, we'll get another movie or two to wrap up all the loose ends, and that never happened. But now it looks like they're going to go ahead and do at least one and maybe two of these wrap-up movies. That's good news.
As far as I know, they are.
Yeah, that was a show that I couldn't miss. So I'm looking forward to a movie.
Right.
I can't wait. Also, if we can go back to last week for just a second and then on to new business. A caller had asked about this television show, Person of Interest.
Right.
Right.
This is the final season.
But there will be more. I mean,
the final
there will be
season
more
has not
coming.
Started.
Right.
It's starting soon. And I did a story about all the CBS. They have a weird schedule coming up that involves Mike and Molly's return and then the series finale of that, plus Person of Interest and The Odd Couple also. And they're going to be doing all kinds of weird things. So look
Is it Caviezel?
That's Jim Caviezel,
that's
Wendy.
That's the Caviezel.
When you left, Kurt, Wendy said the name Caviezel over 100 times. I don't know why.
Well, you know what? When I posted the story, Wendy, I posted the main photos of Jim Caviezel just for you.
I saw that.
An action shot.
Although now the guy from Vinyl is my new love interest.
Bobby Cannavale.
Oh, Bobby Cannavale.
Oh, my geez.
He's been great in so many things. He's been so good in so many things in the past.
Chef. He was in the movie Chef. Yeah.
The station agent.
I'm president of his fan club now.
Are you the president?
So Mike and Molly come back April 25th. Just so we can tell people, this Person of Interest returns May 3rd, and Odd Couple is back April 7th. But at some point in all of their runs, they will be showing 2 episodes a week.
What? Really?
So, Person of Interest will air starting at some point on Mondays and Tuesdays.
The
Odd Couple will air on Mondays and Thursdays.
Yeah.
And Mike and Molly will do back-to-back episodes until it's over.
How about that?
So it's a little weird, but if you go to TVShowPatrol.com,
it's like they're hurrying to get it.
You can find.
It's crazy.
Right.
Well, they are, because then they have to air their summer shows.
And I think they have holds on talent or like publicity that they can't go past a certain point with some of the shows.
Yeah.
So they have to pay penalties if they go too far into the summer.
How about that? How about that?
That's a crazy TV world. There are too many shows. There's officially too many shows.
Yeah.
Wendy, I have some good news for you. This just came in. Jim Caviezel's show, Person of Interest, is adding another actor. Frank Zappa's son, who is now married to Vin Diesel's wife, is joining the show, and his name is Dweezel Diesel Caviezel. So he will be on the show starting on Monday.
That's really good, and I won't wreck it by saying I'm over Caviezel.
Are you over Caviezel?
Yeah, it's now
that's
Cannavale.
How fast things happen in the world.
She's moved on.
That's crazy. All right, we're going to come back. This is a hook that I think will get people interested.
You are so weird.
I know. I'm not discounting that.
We love it.
You both want to discuss the state of sex on television.
Yeah.
Right. Can we do that in a minute?
Yeah,
all right. That's what's coming next.
It's kind of uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable.
It's better in a bed.
It's Phil and Wendy WGN. Phil Leffen, it's Wendy Snyder. Not one, but two television critics in studio. Don't worry, you will not be charged extra. Kurt Wagner's here from TVShowPatrol.com. Amory Cunningham is here. Her website is MyTakeOnTV.com. And you wanted to discuss the state of television in terms of sex and how much sex is now on TV.
Right.
Yes.
Well, I just this struck me when I was watching the screeners for the new season of Daredevil, which starts on Netflix today,
mm-hmm.
which is released on Netflix today. And I love that show, and the season's really great. They screen 7 episodes. But I often feel like when sex is introduced, it sort of stops all momentum of the episode or the show. Like, there's some scenes in there where, I mean, and this wasn't even sex. This was just like longing glances.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I started to feel like, okay, enough already, you know, kiss or do whatever you need to do and move on.
Yeah.
You know, and don't show me it. You know,
I have to agree. Is it that show, The Family? Is that the one with Joan Allen?
Yeah.
Yes.
There was a scene in there, and I'm watching this with my kids, and they're teenagers, but still, there was a moment. I don't want to give it away if people haven't watched it yet, but there's a pretty aggressive sex scene going on, and it's like, why did you need that in there?
Right. And I think it works in certain shows if it's like some kind of romance show, like Outlander. They used some of those sex scenes that they actually sort of tell a story.
Yeah.
You know, they're part of the story. But there's just been so many. I mean, Game of Thrones does this sex... What's it called?
Sexposition.
Sexposition.
But that's expected in that show, isn't it?
Right.
Be honest.
I think it is in that one.
But I think they're...
The family,
I mean, in that show,
a kid
they,
was,
yeah.
you know...
Yeah.
Assaulted and molested, and you know, now they're having a sex. It doesn't need to be in there.
Right. And I just feel like so often they put it in and it doesn't actually further the story, and it really just stops everything. You know, stops all the momentum, takes you out of it. You know?
I'm trying to remember what film critics said. Anytime they see a famous person having sex in a movie, the movie stops for them and they say to themselves, "Wow, I'm watching Reese Witherspoon having sex right now instead of being in the moment." But it doesn't it? Sometimes it's paramount to the story. I mean, depending on
many
on what
things, but there are it is thrown in very gratuitously.
Right. Well, like Vikings on History Channel,
they had lots of sex.
They
those Vikings.
They've
Vikings
had this
were
season
randy.
Already. There have been sex scenes that have made sense.
Yeah.
That have worked for the story. Have furthered the story. And then last night there was this extended weird
bathtub
scene that I was just like.
You're against that sort of thing.
For the Vikings?
I'm really falling out of this right now. You know, this is really taking away from
me. A Viking taking a bubble bath?
Well, no, he was
You'd be surprised.
He was giving someone a bubble bath.
Oh, well, see, that's the tender side of a Viking.
It was sort of spa day on Vikings,
yeah, exactly.
I guess.
You know what show?
Because then he cut her hair.
The show I think handles it really well, actually, is The Good Wife. Because it's a show about law and all that things, but a lot of Alicia's life has been based on the men in her life and kind of how she handles that. And so I really like how the new relationship she has kind of freed her up. And they use sex as kind of a way to further that story, and they handle it really well. So it doesn't pull you out of the show.
It makes sense in that case.
Right. Yeah.
There are shows that, if you think about them, Californication, Girls, Dream On, where you knew that every week you were going to get at least one, sometimes two, or even three sex scenes. That was a given, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Lena Dunham's always naked.
She
you
does seem to be naked a lot. Yeah, maybe
that's her role, to show people that I'm a real girl and I can be naked and look at me.
Yeah. Exactly.
And you save on wardrobe. You save costs on wardrobe. Exactly. Better for everybody.
Although more on waxing.
Yeah.
And makeup. Would you have to do all body makeup?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. So not that long ago, if there was anything even remotely suggestive or subjective as in terms of a sex scene, they would have to put warnings all over, you know, before you saw. And they don't really do that as much anymore, do they?
I watch TMLA all the time.
Yeah, I think they do it more for... I mean, they do that thing, but I think they do more for if it's a really violent episode. But I don't even know if they always do that.
You know what show does it, and I don't understand, is Baskets, the FX show with Zach Galifianakis. On every break, they tell you that this is mature subject matter. And it, I mean, some of it is, but
it
not
is.
That much. Is it? Is it that much?
Oh, to like totally blatantly use someone to get a green card and things like that.
Well, there's that. So it's adult subject matter like that, but it's not something. I mean, if you were watching it and there was an 8-year-old in the room, they wouldn't understand the nuances of a show like that.
Well, maybe they're worried that,
I love that show.
Since he's a clown or a clown.
A clown.
That might be an FX thing, though, because they do it a lot for a lot of their shows.
Most of their shows,
every act break they have something.
Do
for
they?
And they swear in it. So
the Americans, they do.
Yeah. The Americans, for sure.
Yeah, which started again this week. Great show.
Yeah.
What was...
I've heard it was good.
It's really good.
I'm blanking on the Dennis Franz show where...
NYPD Blue?
NYPD Blue. For a long time, it was a given that you were going to see somebody's butt during
the It wasn't until the first butt. And then it was like, it seemed like every season there was a new butt that was going to be shown.
Right.
And they made and they sort of quietly made a big deal of it.
If
it sounds weird to say that, but it was like they didn't want to seem to be promoting it, but they made sure it was out there which episode it was going to be.
Right. Right.
And now there's butts everywhere.
Yeah,
now there's butts everywhere.
You can't turn the TV on without seeing without a butt in your face.
Well, I'm glad that trend continued and not the short sleeve shirt with a tie like Sipowicz wore, because that I would not want to see on TV ever again.
That's so true. Kurt, if either you or Amory, if you know the answer to this, just be careful on how you divulge this. But I believe it's the last episode for Walking Dead of the season.
What?
On Sunday, isn't it? Is this the season? Is it the end of the season?
I thought there
or do
were
we
three
have a few more.
More?
I hope there's three
two
more.
Two or three more, I thought.
I think it was the end of the season.
Regardless, do you know, because they keep hinting online, I have to be very careful, that one of our favorite characters is probably going to be gone, and then they give clues as to why that's true. Do either of you know if
don't
that's...
Don't say anything.
Don't say who it
you
is.
You shouldn't have even said that.
I don't know. I thought this last week's episode, I thought for sure... A favorite
we were
going to
lose somebody.
Everything was going so well, something had to happen. Is this going to follow the lines of the comic book? Because I have my 13-year-old who's constantly telling me, oh, here's what happens in the comic.
Right.
I'm like, will you shut up?
Well, it already has.
It has a little bit, though.
With Carl.
They combine characters and they move characters around. But a lot of, like with Carl and characters that are coming in, I think that scare people for what it means for our favorites.
Right.
I don't know, though.
Yeah, I don't.
Best show on planet Earth. Next they to really vinyl. Love. I wish Bobby Cannavale would be in Walking Dead.
Oh, maybe that'll happen. Wendy's got a letter writing
campaign.
It'll
have to have a time traveling and then all of a sudden.
Right, right. Are we going to see, and I'm surprised this hasn't already happened, there's been one or two copycat shows with dead people walking around and terrorizing society, but is that going to be a trend in the next couple of years? Will we see more and more of that after this is such a hit?
I think what's probably more likely and already has happened is the apocalyptic type of thing. And the apocalypse will be some kind of different thing. Like CW has containment coming up, which there's like an Ebola virus that is let loose in Atlanta. And so they have to close off a part of Atlanta.
Always Atlanta.
And the people who are... Well, that's because that's where they film.
Oh.
And the people who are trapped...
Where's the World Health Organization?
Oh, it's
CDC
in Atlanta.
Is
the
in
CDC
Atlanta.
Oh, CDC.
Yeah.
Well, that's how it happens.
So it's like the plight of the people who are stuck in the contained area, you know, because like it's lawlessness run rampant. But then they're all sort of dying. And then the people on the outside, their loved ones who want to try to get in. And so it's, you know, heavy drama, like that kind of thing. So I think that kind of apocalyptic
show. Last Man on Earth to some extent is that on Fox.
Right. The 100 was that.
The 100.
In
and
a way.
Zombies about zombies, but not
When's
the apocalypse.
When's the plague going to make a comeback?
We want more
the
plague
bubonic
TV.
The bubonic plague.
Well, that could be a historical thing. Maybe History Channel will do that. The plague. You know how it ends.
The plague starring the cast of Vikings.
And the 100 just
Bring
lost a major character, right? Is that okay to talk about? That's already happened. But I know a fan favorite was just killed off on there.
Yeah.
Is it okay to talk about? People are still really upset about it.
Yeah, remember I was telling you about that?
But yes, so because she's going to a zombie show.
Yeah.
She's on Fear the Walking Dead. She's a series regular, so they kind of had to get rid of her.
Oh.
And now she's in a different apocalypse.
Right. Well, history got rid of somebody who was sort of a fan favorite last night. So,
are you allowed to say, or is that still upsetting to people?
Well,
you
I won't say it.
You have to wait because some people, they'll DVR the episode.
Some people haven't watched,
yeah. All right, so don't say. All right, that's fair.
Watch vinyl.
No, oh,
Phil,
people have died
you created
on there,
this monster.
I know, that's fine. We all want the same thing. We want people to find the better television shows out there and support them. So I'm shocked that vinyl's not doing better.
Do not watch Criminal Minds Beyond Borders.
Stay away?
Yes.
Any reason in particular? It's awful.
It's right. very...
thank you for whispering that.
I feel it's very xenophobic.
Oh.
I agree with that. And
that means too much Xena, the
princess warrior.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Xenophobic.
That's what it is.
Called it the Donald Trump of series television.
It's come to that. Two television critics in studio, Kurt Wagner of TV show Patrol.com and Amory Cunningham, who is a writer over at MyTakeOnTV.com. A great website. Both great websites. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
Yeah. A quick break and then more show coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks so much. It's Phil Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, and we are joined right now by comedian Tom Papa, one of my favorites. He's appearing at the City Winery tomorrow. CityWinery.com has all your ticket information. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Fantastic. It's an honor to talk to you. I've heard you on satellite radio many, many times and always enjoy your work.
Oh, thank you very much. It's nice to hear.
I want to start out with a strange question, if you're okay with that. Have you ever been a writer for John and Kate Plus 8? You have been, haven't you?
Really?
No, I haven't. It's on my IMDb page, and I don't know why. That same episode, it was me and Maria Bamford is another great comedian.
Yeah.
He was listed as that same episode. So I think what might have happened is they were filming and passed through a comedy club and then never used it. But
Tom,
I have to say, it is my proudest achievement.
Tom, that is so weird, because usually, you know, when we interview somebody, we go to their Wikipedia page and ask what's wrong there, because anybody could put anything, and that's wrong. But IMDb, usually you can trust.
Almost always accurate, yeah.
It's really true.
Oh,
would you
no.
rule out in the future, if they were going to do a reunion, though, Tom, and they said, we're only doing this if you'll write the episode, then you'd come on board, wouldn't you?
Oh, I'd be there in a second.
I'll ask you this. Rumor has it you've worked with Rob Zombie a couple of times. What an experience that was, huh?
Yeah, he's...
love him.
He's great. He's such a hard worker and such a creative guy. And if you can get by the looking like a real zombie part all the time, he's pretty fun.
But now, forgive me for saying this, but when I think of, because he has directed your comedy specials, when I think of potential directors to direct comedy, he wouldn't be the first guy I'd think of. Why did he get that job, do you think?
Well, I really wanted to make it stand out. I really wanted a filmmaker, and I'd been friends with him for a long time, and he's very creative, and I just wanted these specials to, you know, there's so many comedians now, and there's so many specials, and they all just kind of have a guy standing at the front of the stage, and they all look the same, and I figured if I put it in the hands of a filmmaker, we'll have a chance to have it really look special, and I think I achieved it with those two.
I think most people, and myself included, one of their first exposures to you was in the Jerry Seinfeld documentary Comedian. That changed everything for you, didn't it?
Yeah, that not necessarily the documentary itself, but that period of time when I was meeting him and hanging out with him, and he kind of took me under his wing. That really did change things. Just to be able to learn what it meant to be a comedian and how to work hard and have a guy like that kind of give you a seal of approval was great.
What would you say? Go on.
It also was great to become friends with somebody with their own private jet.
That is always key. And go Rob Zombie or Donald Trump. I'd go Rob Zombie too.
I recommend it.
Tom, the first time I ever worked, I did stand up for a bunch of years, and the first time I ever worked at the Improv on Melrose in Los Angeles, I was a little nervous because that to me was like playing Yankee Stadium. I was very, very scared. And right before I went on, they said, there's a guy who wants to do a little bit of time in front of you. Are you good with that? And I said, absolutely. And it was Jerry Seinfeld. And he's not the easiest guy in the world to follow.
No, he's not. He's
pretty good. Seems to know what he's doing, doesn't he?
Yeah, he really kind of has it nailed. It's funny, the Comedy Store literally is still that way. I was there two nights ago, and I was about to go on, and they came up and said, would you mind if Martin Lawrence does a couple minutes before you?
Please, sure.
I was like, yeah, I've been watching that guy for 30 years.
The problem there is that you have so much material that is similar to Martin Lawrence's. I could see that being a problem.
Yeah, following him was not that difficult.
Who have you worked with that you would say just out and out awed you, that you said, I can't believe I'm working with this guy or this girl? Who has done that for you?
You know, I had a weird moment a couple weeks ago. I was supposed to work with Jerry in New York at the Beacon Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I got bumped for Steve Martin.
Wow.
And that was the first comedian I'd ever heard.
Sure.
As a kid. And I still was at the show because we were going to go do something after. So I was, first of all, happy to be bumped by him. There was no problem. And then I'm sitting in the dressing room. It was me, Jerry Seinfeld, Steve Martin, who was going through his jokes, and Tom Hanks.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Did you have to pinch yourself a couple times?
Yeah. The whole time I'm in that situation, I'm like, just don't ask for a picture. Don't ask for a picture.
You have to, though. You didn't?
No. If you want to go back and you want to end up going to dinner with these guys or hanging out with these guys, you can't be the guy that's asking for the picture. Then they say, okay, yeah, here's a picture. Enjoy the rest of your life.
Is it like a date, though, where, you know, after the second or third date, then you can give out a little bit more of yourself to your date? On the second or third dinner, can you ask for a picture?
Yes, you're exactly right.
All right.
Like with Jerry, I could take pictures all the time because we've been going out for a while, but these guys are brand new.
Yep.
But, yeah. I mean, what a crazy thing to be sitting in there and having him go through his jokes. I was just like, this is why I got into show business in the first place. This is insane.
I am a big hypochondriac, and I used to love watching ER and all the medical shows, and the Cinemax original series, The Nick, is kind of like ER on crack or cocaine, as the case may be.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about that.
That was great. It was such an amazing, amazing, weird show to be in. What was really strange is it looks so real, doesn't it? I mean,
oh my God, too real.
Yeah, I mean, the hospital looks so authentic in the old time New York, and it actually feels that way when you're working on it. We were in Brooklyn with Clive Owen and Steven Soderbergh, and you're just in this giant warehouse. Like you walk in, just like a just a New Yorker going to work. And then you're inside in that hospital all day long doing your scenes and stuff. By the end, you forget that it's a set. They just rebuilt that whole thing. So great and so submersive. It was amazing. Just working with Clive Owen was insane, too. He was so deep in character. And, you know, he's so tortured in it. So even though everybody was acting so serious around him, I felt it was my job to kind of break the tension
sure.
and make jokes in between the scenes
and, this
and get them to laugh.
Yeah. Set in the 1900s before surgeons really knew exactly what they were doing. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And I was kind of a snake oil salesman, and I was selling one of the first X-ray machines to them. And I literally told him, okay, now just hold this plate up against your head, and I'll turn the machine on, and just stand there for 3 hours.
Right.
Sure. No, I'm guessing, Tom, when you work with a Jerry Seinfeld, some of the funny rubs off on you. So when you're with Clive Owen, do you just become more suave automatically from being near that guy?
I was so sexy when I left that place.
Sure, of course.
I had to beat the women off me on the way back to the train.
If I ever worked with him, I would spend all day every day going, you know, you should be James Bond. It's a terrible mistake. You should be James Bond. Did that come up at any point?
No, I felt like he wanted to say that to me, actually.
Even better. Way better.
Yeah.
So you have two
we
shows?
We need a funny-looking, balding James Bond.
That's the new direction.
I like it.
That would work.
No one would see that coming.
So two shows at City Winery tomorrow. Two for the price of one.
Yeah, the first show is sold out, but there's still tickets available for the 9:30 show.
I highly recommend, if you're listening and you have not seen Tom Papa's work, you need to see him. He really is one of the best guys working anywhere today. Really quick, I mentioned earlier you're on satellite radio on Sirius XM. You do this podcast, mm-hmm. Come to Papa. I'm hoping that's an enjoyable experience for you, because every time I hear it, it sounds like it is.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I really do like it. It's really a lot of fun. You know, and I post all of the past episodes with, like, Jerry Seinfeld and Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner and all on cometopapalive.com. And I do really like it. And there's three facets of it. I do this kind of podcast just with me and my sidekick. And then I do these one-on-one interviews with all these great comedians. And then I do these live shows, which is kind of like a Prairie Home Companion in the hands of comedians.
Right.
And I do those. And I'm actually heading to New York after the City Winery. I'm heading to New York to do one in New York on Monday. And that's really great because you just get these great comedians in. And I write the whole script. I write the whole thing. But you only have to be so funny because if you put it in the hands of comics, once they get up on stage, they're not going to bomb.
Right.
So if you write them bad lines, they're going to make them better on the fly.
I love those old radio play type things. That is really so interesting to listen to. I have to get a new car and get a satellite. That's what I need to do.
You can go online too. Yeah, go online and I post those also.
TomPapa.com.
Come to Papa Live. You can go through TomPapa.com. It'll lead you there, or you can go straight to cometopapalive.com.
Tom, because of the scheduling, we didn't get to have you in studio, but next time you're in town, please, by all means, stop up. We would love to meet you in person, all right?
Yes, absolutely. I'd love to come by.
And we'll try out your x-ray machine just for the heck of it. We will definitely try it. Make
you feel comfortable. All right. Sounds good.
Tom has two shows at the City Winery tomorrow. CityWinery.com has the information. First show is sold out. There are some limited tickets available for the second show. Good luck, Tom. Have a good time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. A quick break and then more coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I can't believe it's almost noon. We're just getting warmed up.
Right. Seems we just get started, and before we know it, comes the time we have to say so long. And I'm now tugging on my ear to let Carol Burnett's aunt know that I'm okay.
Well, maybe we should just, you know, roll through the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Oh, Steve has put extra special care into the Wintrust Business Lunch. We don't want to do that to Steve.
Can I tell you that sometime before we get out of here, I doubt we're going to get it in this first half, but the second half for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Pair tickets to an evening with Harry Connick Jr. on May 18th at the Chicago Theater. It's presented by Jam Productions. Tickets went on sale this morning at 10 a.m. at the Chicago Theater's box office, Ticketmaster.com, or you can also call 800-745-3000, or you can listen to us, and sometime before we get out of here at 3 p.m. this afternoon, you will work for some tickets. But it's a fun job.
It will be fun, we promise. Somebody will walk away with those tickets. We can't say any more right now, but somewhere between the hours of 1 and 3 o'clock, your chance to win some prime Harry Connick Jr. tickets.
He is amazing. I saw him at the place over in, I can't remember where it was now, but I saw Harry Connick Jr. at the, I don't know what it's called now. It's the one in Orland.
Oh, Tasty Freeze?
Yes. He was at the Tasty Freeze.
Tasty
he
Freeze?
Was doing the zebra soft serve cones.
Always delicious.
And just these personal little concerts. Yeah. He is amazing and pretty easy on the eyes.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to age either.
Mm-mm.
He looks almost, I think most people probably, when he first reached prominence, was with the When Harry Met Sally soundtrack. He's saying It Had to Be You, and I think that woke a lot of people up. And if you look at a picture of him then and a picture of him now, it looks like 6 weeks have passed.
Is he still married to Jill Goodacre? The things we
like
know
a,
in life is the things that we know are stupid.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. She is lovely, obviously, but
model.
I hear the name and I go, which James Bond movie was she the Bond girl in? Goodacre.
Right.
I think it was From Russia with Love. I can't remember which one. But yeah, they are still very much together, and why not?
They're a beautiful couple.
That's one of those couples where they both got the good end of that deal.
Yeah, but have you seen their kids?
Hideous.
I don't even know if they have
kids.
Kidding.
I don't know if they do either. I'm positive their kids would not be hideous. And if they are, I'm sorry.
Well, that's sometime before we get out of here at 3.
Yeah.
And shall we take a break and talk to Steve Bertrand about the Wintrust Business Lunch?
Steve is just moments away. Stick around. A lot more coming your way next. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, Kim, thanks. It's part two of our show. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. You have a giant grin on your face. You're happy. Is it the Friday? Is it the Friday angle? Is that what it is?
Well, it's yes. I thought it was Prince Spaghetti Day.
No, Wednesday is Prince Spaghetti Day. You know
I
that.
I know. So then I got really excited that it was Friday. Usually midweek, I think it's Friday already.
Right.
It was the opposite.
This week was the opposite. Yesterday, at the end of the show, we were talking about something that you would imagine would be a local story, but not a national, if not international story, and that is that the White Sox, Adam LaRoche, first baseman slash designated hitter. Slash father of the year. Is retiring from the game of baseball for a reason you don't normally see a guy retire from baseball for, and that is that they want to restrict his son from visiting the clubhouse on a daily basis. This has never happened, as far as I know, in the world of baseball or the world of sports, but it's a big story. It's been picked up nationally or internationally. Everybody's talking about, is this guy the greatest father of all time, or is this guy kissing away millions of dollars for no reason? Kevin Powell from our sports department joins us right now. He's at spring training. Hi, Kevin.
Hey there, Bill and Wendy. Yeah, I'm outside Camelback Ranch, outside the White Sox clubhouse. We just got done talking to some of the players. Chris Sale, who got into a heated exchange with team executive Kenny Williams when Williams addressed the clubhouse a couple days ago, telling the team that Adam has decided to move on after we told him his son Drake can't be around as often. And Sale exploded. Sale's very close with LaRoche, shared a locker next to him. And
Drake.
Drake was a couple down from him. But, he was still very upset. Very upset. He says the team, the players were lied to. He says he's heard three different stories. And he says he's still just as confused as the rest of us as how this exactly went down, because there were reports that maybe players went to complain to Kenny Williams about Drake being around, but you know that hasn't been confirmed or anything. So the players seem confused, and it's a very bizarre situation here.
And do you have some audio of Chris Sale going off on this a little bit, which I may say is a very bold move for Chris Sale?
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he spoke for 20 minutes, and there were some real shots fired, especially Kenny Williams' way. He said, real quickly before we get to the audio, he said, somebody walked out those doors the other day, and it was the wrong guy, plain and simple. So we can read into that statement however we want. But,
wait, now how safe does this make Chris Sale? I mean, I don't think this is going to be
they
good.
They don't want to lose. Chris Sale's one of the premier pitchers in the American League. You don't want to lose him, but you don't want to be yelling at your boss.
Right.
I know.
Yeah, and it seems sort of out of the ordinary for Chris Sale. This really isn't the way he does things. But
Kevin, look at how many times you have said bad things about Jimmy DeCastro, Todd Manley, Todd Ward, our bosses, and Wendy and I have to talk you down and say these aren't the kind of things you want to say to management.
Right, right. Like, I won't say them publicly. I just say them behind
privately
their backs.
Privately is fine.
Yeah, privately behind their backs is totally fine. Yep. But when it comes to talking to the media, you know, you got to keep your mouth up.
Absolutely.
Shut a little bit. So.
Although anyways, now that this came out, this is probably your last trip to spring training. You can thank Bill for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Bill.
Are you talking about Kevin's Manly stories?
Yeah, he's always telling us bad stuff about the bosses, and you don't do that publicly. No.
Well, you don't do that publicly to your boss, and that's why I'm so curious as to why Chris Sale is sticking up for his buddy.
Well, and Ken Williams released a statement. He didn't talk to us today. He just says, while I disagree with Chris's assertions today, I certainly have always appreciated his passion. That's all Ken Williams said in his statement.
Good answer.
But I guess the whole situation, because as we talked about this yesterday, I didn't necessarily think there was a bad guy here, because Kenny Williams was just trying to win a championship, and maybe he did. He had to have heard something from a player, from a coach, from somebody.
Right.
Because this would have just happened out of the blue. Now, at the same time, Adam LaRoche was like, well, I'd rather hang out with my family. I'll forget the $13 million. I'll retire. But now it's sort of the power structure of this team, and Kenny Williams was the GM before he handed it off to Rick Hahn, so there's always seemed kind of an odd power struggle between those two, even though they say there's not.
Yeah.
And then even Robin Ventura, like, why is Kenny Williams coming into the clubhouse? Why isn't Robin Ventura, who's with the players all the time in the clubhouse, addressing the players? And this is what Chris Sale had to say about that.
I believe if a player had a problem with it, they would have come to Adam, or at least taken it to Robin. You know, if I think Robin was the right person to handle this, and you know, he was handcuffed.
Well, that is interesting.
Yeah, so you know, I think that was the right word to use there, handcuffed, because when Kenny Williams just comes into your clubhouse,
yeah,
And he is the executive vice president of the team. What is Robin Ventura really supposed to do? He's got 1 year left on his contract.
Right.
And people didn't think Robin was really safe for even this season. So he's going to keep his full mouth shut.
Yeah.
And he's in a weird spot because, of course, he wants to support his players, but he can't do what Chris Sale just did and shots fired at his boss. Right.
You know, Kevin, we were talking to NBC5's Peggy Kaczynski yesterday, and the bottom line was, you know, we've had three sucky seasons. We, being a Sox fan, the White Sox have three bad seasons under their belt. If they were coming off a World Series, this probably wouldn't be an issue, but
a World Series, or even if Adam LaRoche, and we talked to Anthony Rizzo about this yesterday, and he joked, he said, well, this probably wouldn't even be a story if Adam LaRoche hit 25 home runs and 100 RBIs last season.
It was not the case.
He was coming off his worst year batting 200 with just 12 home runs and 44 RBIs while getting paid $12 million. So,
right.
You know, if he had a normal year, that was relative
Kevin,
to the rest of his career,
but please,
I don't think it would have been an issue.
That's $1 million per home run. That's not bad.
Exactly.
That's not bad at all.
A player who's not delivering is now looking like a hero to everyone because he's standing up for the family values of baseball, which it is to spectate.
Sure.
And maybe on Sundays, if they win, you can go to the clubhouse. But every single solitary day?
Yeah. And Kenny Williams may be the bad guy in the clubhouse right now, but for the most part, I think White Sox fans in general haven't been this happy with Kenny in a while, considering he somehow found a way to clear $13 million off the books,
right?
And add some flexibility to the roster,
right?
By in some weird way having forced Adam LaRoche to retire,
right?
He's cleared this money off the books, and White Sox fans were not big LaRoche fans last season. I'll say that.
All right, how about this, Kevin? This is just a scenario. Now this frees up Adam LaRoche's kid to go back to school. So does he now go to school and bring his dad, Adam LaRoche, and have him sit there through his classes in high school?
No, remember, they're not a school family,
they don't like
Adam
school.
Said.
They do not like school.
Right. So maybe he could take him to his private tutor sessions or something.
All right. That's better. And then what about this? Opening day is like 2 weeks away. What does this do to a team where all of a sudden everybody's screaming and yelling at each other? That can't be good for business, can it?
Nope.
Yeah, well, you know, we talked about it. Chris Sale wasn't as confident that this wouldn't leak onto the playing field as Adam Eaton was, outfielder Adam Eaton, who we talked to, who said this has actually brought the roster closer.
Oh.
Now, maybe when Chris Sale settles down a little bit, and this, you know, he'll kind of move on from that and sort of have the same sentiment. But Adam Eaton was saying the right things today. You know, this has brought us closer as a clubhouse. You know, we're tighter than ever. The players are close. It's the issue of management versus the players and the clubhouse right now. But it does give Robin Ventura some flexibility. They've got to fill that DH role now so he can move some pieces around. And we'll see. I'd be surprised if they don't go get somebody outside of the organization to fill the role as well.
Sure.
I would love to get Drake LaRoche's take on this because I know that Adam went with his father to the ball field and he and his brother went to the ball field at Comiskey, the old Comiskey. And, you know, was Adam saying, Drake, here's how we do it in our family, so you will come with me? Or is this, I would love to get Drake's take on this.
Yeah, probably an odd situation too to tell him, hey son, I just walked away from $13 million because of you.
Right.
Somebody texted us yesterday, because imagine the feelings that Drake is feeling right now, like, oh my God, my dad's no longer a Major League Baseball player because of me.
Right.
Yeah, you feel bad for the kid. I think everyone just wants him sort of out of this story.
He shouldn't be in this story.
Yeah.
Right. So, again, very bizarre, but to wrap it up, a player walked away from $13 million because he wanted to spend more time with his son, and Chris Sale is very angry with Kenny Williams.
See, come over to the Sox, the South Side, people, because it's more exciting on
the
South
soap
Side.
Soap opera, isn't it?
Yeah, this wasn't supposed to be what this season brought for baseball in Chicago. It was supposed to be Cubs talk left and right, and we're talking White Sox all week. It's been crazy.
As Kenny Williams turns.
Yes,
that's the name of the soap opera.
That's it. Well, Kevin, you did a fine job there at spring training, and we appreciate your report. We really do.
Well, thanks a bunch, guys. I'll see you guys next week. And real quickly, there's a video of all of Chris Sale's comments from the clubhouse on WGNRadio.com if you want to go watch it.
Excellent. I do.
All right. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, Kev.
Thanks, guys.
Kevin Powell, mostly of the Steve Cochran Show, but we're all allowed
he's
to talk
blossoming.
To him. Yes, he is. Yes,
he's
he is.
He's doing a great job.
Yeah.
Steve should be worried. Ross leaves now, you know. Kevin may be leaving.
Things happen fast.
He may be taking Adam LaRoche's position.
It's possible. It's very possible. We'll take a quick break, and then we have a lot more for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder talking about a story that really, by all rights, you would imagine would be local, but it's not. It's bigger than local. Wendy has something to say, and then we'll continue.
Well, it ties in even when you can't be there. They are. It's Chicago Tribune Sports Plus with more coverage from more journalists than anywhere else in the city. Join now at chicagotribune.com/sportsplus.
All right, very quickly, we will catch you up. Adam LaRoche has been a member of the White Sox for a while. He's got a son who's 14 years old who he's been bringing to spring training. He hangs out with the team. He dresses in the uniform. He takes batting practice. He takes ground balls. Everybody loves him, right? Mm-mm, not everybody.
But we don't know that.
Well,
Kenny Williams is making it seem that he's heard some rumblings in the clubhouse, in the locker room. And then Chris Sale is coming saying, if somebody had a problem with the kid, they would have talked to Adam about it. So he's kind of denying that there's a problem.
I guarantee you, in a spring training setting where they've got roughly 40 players, maybe a couple of more, one or two of the players was not thrilled with the fact that there's a 14-year-old everywhere they go and everything they do. So somebody said to somebody, hey, look, I'm not saying get rid of the kid altogether, but we got to do something. He's here all the time. Somebody must have not been thrilled with it.
I wouldn't be thrilled with it, and I love my kids.
Sure.
I mean, I'm sure there are other players who would like their kids in the clubhouse, too.
Right.
But it's Major League Baseball, right?
I know.
All right, Keith, what do you think about this?
Well, I just kind of felt sorry for a little bit for Adam, the father, because I just imagine him getting home, like, the other day when it was first announced that he's quitting, and he was, like, first thing he's, like, ripped off his clothes. Hey, let's go ride bikes. Now we can go play all day, and we can go have Slurpees down at 7-Eleven. And the kid kind of just, like, looked at him and said, look, Dad, I thought this give me some time to make my moves on Susie down the street. So
maybe Drake's relieved.
Maybe he is.
I couldn't walk away from $13 million.
No.
I would kind of explain it to my son, you know. But so I'm sure that there was more behind this than, you know, it's very admirable, but, you know.
Is it, though?
I don't know.
I keep feeling like I'm a terrible parent when I say, when I'm questioning his father of the year, is it admirable? Is it really?
Well,
he was hired to do a job.
It's admirable that he's, like, presenting it as a family thing, but no, I don't like the pressure that it puts on the kid, you know, because all of a sudden, you know, when the kid doesn't have a new BMX bike, you know, for Christmas, he's going to look at his dad, you know.
Say, why'd you quit?
If I stayed on the team, I could have my freaking BMX bike.
That's right. Keith, thank you very much for calling.
Can I just say there was a statement from Jerry Reinsdorf on all of this?
The owner of the White Sox saying what, Steve? What does he say?
He appreciates everyone's attention, da-da-da-da-da. As a result, we do not want to comment until that process is complete. I've instructed members of the organization not to talk about this issue and get our focus back on the field and winning baseball games. This is an internal issue, and we are in the process of holding a number of discussions with players, staff, and the front office.
Doesn't that say, though, exactly how serious a matter this is when the number one guy says to everybody underneath him, we're not making any more comments on this. We got to figure this thing out. This is not what a baseball team should be worried about 2 weeks before opening day.
It's an embarrassment.
Yeah.
It really is. And, Laura, you have a fabulous question.
No, I heard this somewhere else, that he also has a daughter. And how does this make her feel that he wants to spend so much time with the golden child, the boy? You know, I'm thinking, is he choosing which child he likes more? And granted, she's a girl. Should she be in the locker room either? No, but he should. I agree with you, Wendy. The children don't belong there. Let's all bring our kids to work then. It's not right.
Mm-mm.
And it's not fair to the people you work with.
No, because you know baseball players, they swear, everyone does. But you know it's probably worse, especially, sorry, Wendy, when the Sox lose as much as they do. There's
yeah, I know. All right, whatever. You're absolutely right.
Wow.
And do they have to walk on eggshells and not say stuff because there's a kid there?
And when these people sign up to be a professional baseball player, they don't sign up thinking there's going to be a kid on the field with them every day during spring training. I mean, this is crazy. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
And I asked you.
Yes.
Is Drake a baseball player? Is that what he aspires to be?
He seems to love it. I mean, everything, all the footage I've seen of him, they referred to him last year as the 26th man because he hung around the team and he loved being a part of it.
They
he
say that about batting. Southpaw, too.
Okay, sure, they do. And Pete Best. They used to say that about Pete Best. So, yeah, he seems to certainly enjoy the game. I don't think he's being held there against his will. It's just everybody in this is in an awkward situation. The team is, the dad is, the son is, the general manager is. If they lose, the fans are. Everybody's getting the short end of the stick on this.
Which do you think is messier, like the last year under the Trestman era with the Bears or this?
Trestman.
You think so?
Yeah.
This is pretty messy.
Yeah.
That was an unfair question. You know he's going to take down the Bears whenever he has the opportunity.
He's a hater.
Being a Sox fan, this is really frustrating to me because, again, as Peggy Kaczynski pointed out yesterday, if Adam LaRoche was, if his numbers were up and he was doing real well.
If he was their star player, this would probably play out differently.
I'm thinking, yes, that it wouldn't be an issue or he wouldn't be walking away either.
Right.
Because he's doing something.
Right.
And he has the potential for more money. At this point, it's like, this makes him look like a hero when he's been underperforming.
I know.
You ever have a boss tell you to do something you didn't want to do?
Every day that happens. That's life, though.
Right.
I mean, the boss is the boss.
And this idea that he's, you know, well, I don't know too much about it, so I shouldn't say much, but that he's this great guy for walking away from 13 million or some 17 million or something.
13.5, I believe.
All right, how much has he made? Clearly he doesn't need the money.
And he's saying it's family values and that's his thing.
Right.
And he went to the park with his dad.
Right.
But again, it's like things are different now.
Andy the Clown never brought his son to games. Ribby and Rhubarb never brought
because
their kids to
Andy
games.
Andy the Clown's son would have been horrified at what he saw.
Wasn't it Kenny Williams who kicked Andy the Clown out?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
But look at, I remember, and I brought this up yesterday with Peggy, Ozzie Guillen brought both his sons.
Yeah, Udi and Kuse?
Yes, not really.
I
and then
those were names.
One of them was saying, remember, said something bad about the Sox?
Yeah.
And then he was taken out of the picture
that
and was told never to come back.
Maybe they're more sensitive to father-son relationships because of that.
Could be.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a quick break. Uday and Kose. Those are the Game Boys. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Great job, Steve, as usual.
Always.
We missed you yesterday.
Yes, we did. It doesn't make sense how big of a story this has become. You would just think this would be such a small local story, but it's not.
Adam LaRoche, Chicago White Sox, wants his son Drake LaRoche to hang with him and has been hanging with him. And now all hell is breaking loose in the White Sox organization.
I do want to point out that before Adam LaRoche was a member of the White Sox, he played for the Washington Nationals, where his son was also a fixture.
He was allowed.
He was there. And I don't know if it was with the same regularity. They're saying now he was with the team on a daily basis. I'm not positive that went on in Washington. Maybe.
Yeah, that's a good question. And Nancy has the best question of all. Hi, Nance.
Hi. Why did management allow it?
In the first place, why was he allowed to do it in the first place?
Ridiculous. I can't apply for a job and say, oh, by the way, I'm bringing my daughter and son with me every day to sit in the office.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Unless that was in his contract.
And plus the fact, if I was a mother, I wouldn't want my child around those baseball players.
You do get exposed to some things that maybe your average 14-year-old might not be ready for.
I know, and then they're so protective of him. Why are they putting him in that environment? This is just plain weird.
I am so with you, Nance.
It is.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Nance.
Thank you.
All right. I agree, and Larry has that question. What is your question?
Hi, I love you guys. You guys are great to keep me busy all day long.
Where's
the mother in all this? Is Mrs. LaRoche around or something? Does she have anything to say about this?
She agreed with it, and they also have a daughter. And again, I'm hearing all this from Peggy Kaczynski. And they discussed it, and the mom said, yeah, that's okay, worrying about schooling a little bit. So they have a Sylvan Learning Center tutor that comes to help out a little bit. But I'm sorry, but Adam LaRoche is not like giving him reading, writing, and arithmetic in between innings.
I didn't think so.
Well, you do need to know math skills and stuff to play baseball. You know, the
three outs.
Yep.
Yes, 3 outs here and there.
Figure out batting averages and stuff.
Have a great weekend, Larry. We appreciate you listening.
It's no substitute. It's so funny. The LaRoches seem to be the two only people on the planet who don't think a 14-year-old needs to attend school regularly.
And what about the daughter? Is she getting homeschooled? Because that might actually be. They're from a very small rural town, and maybe that is happening with her.
I don't know.
Does the daughter get to go to the beauty salon and get her manis and pedis with her mom every day?
Could be.
Well, you did not just say that.
Yes, I did.
Maybe her mom's an industrial engineer.
Maybe she is. Excuse me, but women still get manicures and pedicures, whether you're an engineer or, you know, a model.
Manny Petty, by the way, used to play for the Seattle Mariners.
Until that whole thing with his daughter, remember?
Ugly story.
Hey, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you have to say?
Well, a couple things. First of all, I coached baseball for 33 years, and I played in the minor leagues. I want to know how you can develop a championship mentality if you're running a day school. You know, I love the kids. The father-son thing is great. But you're asking, or at least you should be, asking these guys to focus all of their attention on getting better and developing a championship team while they're with the White Sox.
Absolutely.
And furthermore, I think he doesn't go far enough. Take the damn cell phone off the field. How can you allow distractions of any kind if you're trying to focus on the building a championship team?
Right.
And, that's where the spades should be laid. Not on whether a kid should be there or not. It should be on the focus of the players. And, you know, Williams, whether you like him or not, and the other executives, they have a tremendous amount of pressure on them to produce winning teams. This is not a park district or a day camp operation. It's a professional sport. And I think whether you like it or not, that's where the focus should be.
Agreed, well Dan. So nice.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Frank has an idea.
Yeah, why couldn't the Sox have employed a kid as a bat boy?
That's an interesting idea.
They've been doing it for years, and that would legitimize his being there.
Yeah.
Employee.
Because now he's out on the
right age, 14, for, you know, kids to be bad boys.
Yeah.
Because he's out on the field and stuff with them. Because what about insurance? What if he gets hit with a line drive? Isn't that dangerous?
I remember. I don't know if you remember all this, Frank. I brought this up yesterday. Years ago when Dusty Baker was the manager of the Cubs, they used his son Darren, who was much younger than Adam LaRoche's son. They kind of used him as a bat boy and almost like a team mascot. But I remember there was an incident where one of the players almost ran him down. He had some kind of a horrible accident, or a near accident, I should say, on the field.
Yeah,
and that was the end of Darren being on the field.
One of the players scooped him up.
Was that what it was?
Yeah. One of the players scooped him up out of the way. But a kid at 14, that's about the average age of bat boys.
Yeah.
14, 16. You know, but you'd think he had a little more sense at that age. I think he could be reasonably considered an employee as a bat boy.
Yep.
To legitimize him being there. And, you know, they could say, hey, he's an employee.
It's not a bad idea.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
You know,
Thank
we
you
had a
calling.
Former bat boy, a former Major League bat boy in the other day. Do you remember who?
No, but
one of our guests was a bat boy for the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, and I'm going to kick myself because I love this trivia. Who was it?
It would be Walter Jacobson.
Oh, that's right.
He was a bat boy for the Cubs for a while.
I forgot about that.
How about that?
We should ask about things he saw in the clubhouse. Yeah.
I don't think I'm ready to hear those answers, are you?
He's blocked them out.
Yeah.
And we did mention that Adam LaRoche's dad, Dave LaRoche, brought Adam and his brother to Comiskey Park when they were growing up. So maybe Adam's thinking, you know, it's a family business. I'm going to bring Drake with me. But it's not like, you know, I know people who run like funeral parlors. A lot of times, you know, the kids then take over for the dad and they keep the family business going.
Right. But those are businesses that are owned by the family.
Right.
It's different when it's a Major League Baseball team.
Exactly.
You know?
And when I asked you if the kid's playing baseball, I mean, shouldn't he be, you know, gearing up and working on his skills while playing in school?
Well, I don't know which would be more valuable. If you want to be a Major League Baseball player, would it be better for him to be playing in, He's 14 years old, so that's probably Babe Ruth or Colt League at that point. Is it better for him to be doing that with kids his own age, or is it better for him to be around Major League Baseball players learning from them? I don't know. That could be a half or half of the other. I'm not sure which plays better.
But not everybody has the opportunity to do that.
Very few of us.
So it shouldn't be, you know, why aren't other people bringing their kids then? But it is going to turn into a kinder care.
It is. I said to you, though, if when I was 14 years old, and at that point, I'd already been playing Little League Baseball for 5 or 6 years. If somebody said, you have the option of going to school or hanging out with the White Sox, that decision is made before the sentence is even finished.
That's why that shouldn't be put into your head. You shouldn't have the option.
I know.
Kids go to school, you know, play baseball in school and Little League and then college ball, and then you can come with dad to work and learn some things.
Right.
He may not be playing Adam LaRoche by then, but...
No, it looks like he's done. He could very well be done. Although another team is going to, as a goodwill gesture, is going to bring him on and say, oh, by the way, our team is built on family values. If you want to bring your son, look, our arms are open. Bring him on in.
And that's not fair.
Probably not.
Because, no one's making fun of family values. It's great for father and son time.
Sure.
But, you know, mothers and fathers go to work, and that's their work time, and then there's family time. I would love to bring my kids with me every day and say, hey, you don't have to go to school. We'll just keep it like, you know, a big bear. We'll be in a big den, and you can just hang out with me all day. But that's not how things work.
Right. And then you throw in that $13 million.
We don't ever have to worry about that.
I don't think so either. But I hate to say it, but that's a huge motivator, because that's where I say to my son, give me a year, let me play some baseball. When the year is done, I'm all yours. We got $13 million in our account. Yeah. You tell me what you want to do.
And Karen, that's what you want to touch on, right? That $13
million? That's what he did.
Hey, Karen.
A lot of work.
Okay. Karen. Yeah. She's been on hold so long.
She's talking to another radio show.
Let's listen to
it.
Is it Bernstein?
Yeah.
Hey, Karen.
Good boy.
Let's listen.
I heard either Mully or Hanley. I can't tell who's who.
Hey, Karen, what's going on? I can't hang up.
We have to at some point.
Karen.
This is illegal.
No, it isn't. She called in.
Oh, she called us. It's legal.
Let's listen. My husband is such a jerk.
She didn't say that.
She's at the park. Oh, she's with Drake LaRoche right now.
She is?
Yes.
That's awkward. All right.
Karen, going once. Dog or a kid?
It's one of those dog kids.
Is it that monkey from the Mountain Dew commercial?
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Right at the end. Right at the end, the last half second. No, she's back in. No.
Oh, my God. I'm putting her on hold. Why don't you monitor that, Kevin, and find out who she was talking to? We'll take a break.
Kevin, if by Monday she doesn't pick up, we'll just move on to something else. All right. Your thoughts on this will continue next at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. It's a sunny Friday weekend. The after effects of St. Patrick's Day is probably still going on all weekend long.
For some, sure.
Do you remember Karen, the listener who called in and was, she was on hold and then we were on hold?
We were eavesdropping on her, I believe.
Oh, no.
Karen, you said some disgusting things. Some awful, disgusting things.
Oh, no, I did not.
Now, today I became a man, thanks to you.
We know you were on hold for a while, but we went to you and you were... where are you, at the park?
No, I had my dog with me and we went into the pet store.
All right, that's better then. That explains some of the foul language we heard.
All right, well, we were talking about Adam LaRoche, his son Drake, and you had a question about the $13 million, huh?
Yes. I mean, my children are grown adults, but I could just see that 14-year-old 10 years from now saying, you gave up how much?
Well,
$13 million?
He's got to know now. If you're 14 years old, you're savvy enough, either online or on your phone somewhere.
He doesn't have any friends. His dad is his best friend, so he could keep that from him. And I don't mean that to be mean.
But I bet he knows now.
Still, a 14-year-old isn't comprehending a lot. And there's got to be a lot more behind the scenes that's not forthright. There's
something is not right. I mean, yeah, I've heard a lady say it's weird. It's hard to understand. It's hard for adults to comprehend, let alone a 14-year-old. I think there's more to it.
It sure seems like it.
Very sensitive, something very sensitive, and it could be to protect the child. I don't know, but...
Karen, do you have kids?
Oh, yeah. I have two grown kids, and I have teenage grandchildren.
Okay, and you have a dog, and, you know, how come a player, what if they don't have kids and they want to bring their dog to the park to go catch the foul balls?
Well, we don't have balls anymore.
That's why you're at the vet.
I mean, baseballs, Karen. God.
Okay. I don't know. We have
I love you.
In our family. we're kid sensitive, and we understand, and we love our children. We love everybody's child. However, this is something askew, and for him to even shove his son in the front of the line here and say, that's why I am leaving this.
That seems wrong.
It's wrong. It's wrong. It's,
yep. Agreed.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for Karen. Calling.
You're welcome.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks. Be well. Bye-bye.
Here's what's going to happen. May I predict the future for you?
Yes.
This is what's going to happen. It's going to become known that several players on the team, not just one, not just two, but a couple players on the team at some point said, hey, I like this kid. I like Adam. He's our teammate, and I like the kid, but this is getting crazy. We got to say something. And at some point, word's going to get out as to who it was, and that's not going to be good for the team.
I don't think it's going to come out because you've got Chris Sale supporting Adam LaRoche.
Sure.
So Adam's gone. They don't need to make amends with him. They're gonna back Chris Sales and say, yeah, really, none of us really care that much. That's what I think's gonna happen.
But you know that this reached the story it's become because several players went to Kenny Williams and said, Kenny,
I don't believe it. I think it's because they're losing and Kenny Williams is like, we got to take this seriously.
But even, you mean losing as opposed from last year?
From 3 seasons ago.
This year's spring training has been a good one for the White Sox. They've got a pretty good record. Up until a week ago, they had the second or third best record in the American League. It's just spring training. It doesn't count. But by everything you saw, you go, oh, this team seems to be coming together nicely. And then this.
This shouldn't even be a this.
It shouldn't be.
Sue, you have a great idea.
Yes, actually, it's a brilliant move on Kenny Williams' part to get out of Adam LaRoche's contract because he was underperforming. His batting average last year was like under 200, and they were trying to trade him, and nobody wanted him. So it's just a brilliant move to get out of his contract.
And he knew he'd probably walk if he said, you can't bring your kid every day. Although on behalf of Kenny Williams, from my understanding, he said, just reduce it like 50% so you can still bring him, just not every single solitary day.
That's so important, and that gets lost in all of this.
That's compromise, baby.
Right.
But you could be right on this, Sue. We'll find this out.
I think I am.
All right.
Are you a Sox fan?
I'm a huge Sox fan, and my husband listens to sports radio, and he's the one that actually, we were talking about it last night, and he's the one that said, this is what's happening. It's just a brilliant move to get out of an underperforming contract.
Interesting.
It really is. Tell your husband he's a genius, and tell him to listen to us.
Yeah.
Okay.
We talk a lot of sports.
Thanks, Sue.
We have today, actually.
I know. It's a big story.
It's a huge story. It's on
this.
The front page of the Sun-Times.
All right, I'm going with Sue on that.
That it was premeditated from Kenny Williams as a way to get out. I think Sue had said he was hitting just below 200. Not that this matters. I think he was just a shade or two above 200. But
207,
still,
I think.
Yeah, that sounds right. But it's still, I mean, we didn't get the superstar we were hoping for.
And Peggy Kaczynski alluded to that yesterday as well.
Yeah.
You know, if he would have been performing way better, if the Sox had been a winning team, this wouldn't have even been brought up.
That's it.
I like it.
We're going to take a break. Steve's going to give you the news. And then in just a little while, your chance to win coveted Harry Connick Jr. tickets from us. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Are you doing jazz hands? You
yes,
are, aren't you?
I am.
Boy, the influence that Bob Fosse has had on you over the years. It's Bill and Wendy. We have
Everybody's going crazy already.
I think
already.
This is a fantastic prize. Do you agree? This is a great prize.
Absolutely. Does he sing at all?
Harry Connick Jr.? Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Does he sing at all?
Well,
does
I thought we were going to... That's what we were building up to with that.
To hear the
and
voice
then all of a sudden it
fades Harry Connick
down.
Jr.?
Oh.
Yeah, at some point in that song, he does sing. Kevin, do you want to play a little more of the...
The vocals, maybe?
It Had to Be You?
There.
Here it is. Uh-huh. Listen to that voice.
It had to be you.
Listen to
you
how beautiful.
Do jazz hands.
I wandered around.
I'm not allowed to do jazz hands.
You would look silly doing jazz hands.
I can't do jazz hands.
But it would look good with your soft shoes.
No.
Can I tell you my Harry Connick Jr. story?
Yeah, no,
what,
go.
What is it?
He used to be around here quite a bit with Roy Leonard and things like that. Roy was a big early booster. And I had tickets to go to a show at one Chicago theater, and I was dating this girl named Courtney. And so I'm like, Harry, you know, look, just, and this was back in the days of cassettes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, just record something, you know, hey, hi, Courtney, it's Harry Connick, blah, blah, blah. So I'll never forget, he says, hi, Courtney, it's Harry Connick Jr., you're with the best guy in the world.
Oh.
So I edit it, you know, and it goes right into the post, boom, starts a song after he says that. She gets in the car, I put the cassette in, I'm so proud. And she goes, wow, that sounded just like him. I'm like, yeah, that was him. No, it couldn't have been him. Yeah, it was him.
She didn't believe
you?
She
never believed you.
I don't think she still believes me.
That's not good.
I know.
That's not good at all.
Boy, that's a sweet little Steve Bertrand mixtape story.
That was a golden moment right there. And
you got the actual guy and didn't even get credit for it.
Nothing.
Did she dump you that night or after the...
No, it was two nights later. Def Leppard.
Oh, well, God, no wonder she dumped you.
We have these incredible tickets to see Harry Connick Jr. perform live. You have all the information, Wendy. What are the specifics? I don't know what.
All right. First of all, I've seen him, and Steve Bertrand has seen him, and you can see Harry Connick Jr. May 18th. It's at the Chicago Theater. What a beautiful venue. It's presented by Jam Productions. You can get tickets this morning, and they started at 10 a.m. Chicago Theater box office, Ticketmaster.com, or you can call 800-745-3000. Pair tickets to an evening with Harry Connick Jr., May 18th, Chicago Theater, or you can win them from us right now, but you are going to have to work for them.
It's going to take a little bit of doing. You know, I love creating these games, and sometimes they're always difficult. Sometimes I make them a little bit easier. This one is somewhere in the middle. I think you got a pretty good chance of getting the tickets. Here's what you want to do. 312-981-7200. Call right now. We're going to get two finalists, and you will square off against each other in a game that I've concocted just for this occasion.
All right, and how do we pick the callers?
You decide. We have 12 lines, all of them ringing right now. You pick two numbers, Wendy, anything you want between the numbers 1 and 12. You decide.
All right. Well, since today is the 18th and the show is on May 18th, I'm going to take callers 1 and 8.
1 and 8. Very, very nice.
All right. So
we will meet those people right now.
Okay. Caller number 1. Hi, what is your name?
Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
Debbie, have you ever seen Harry Connick Jr. perform live before?
I have not.
You're in for a treat. If you're the winner, you're in for a treat. If you're the loser, you will feel bad that entire night. I hope you're the winner.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, you are caller number 1, and now I'm going to grab caller number 8.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, caller number 8. What is your name?
Marion DeLira.
Hi, Marion. How are you?
Good.
Marion, have you ever seen Harry Connick Jr. perform live before?
No, I have not.
Well, you are also in for a treat. I hope you win. I know I say that to all the contestants, but I'm trying to seem like I'm fair and unbiased. Hope you both win. I hope it's a tie and you go together.
So Debbie, meet Marion. Marion, meet Debbie. You'll be competing against each other.
Hi.
Hi, Debbie.
All right. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a very fast break. Stay on the line, Debbie. Stay on the line, Marion. We will take a very fast break. I will explain the rules to the game we're about to play. Simple rules. We'll see one of you is going to walk away with Harry Connick Jr. tickets next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We have a pair of tickets to see the one and only Harry Connick Jr. You got to work for him a little bit. We're down to two contestants. We've got Debbie. We've got Marion on the line. We're going to play a game called Junior's Farm, ladies. I will explain exactly how you play Junior's Farm. The rules are simple. I have written 10 questions. Each of the questions concerns a celebrity, somebody of some renown, who is in fact a junior. The word junior is somewhere in their name. I will ask them one at a time. I will start out with a simple question valued at 100 points. Each question will get progressively harder and go up in value to 200 to 300 to 400, all the way down to 1,000. At the end of the 10 questions, the highest score total wins. Does that seem fair?
Sure.
Okay.
Will they be asked one at a time, or do they have to go up against each other?
You have to buzz in with your names. When you know the answer to the question, Debbie, if it's you, buzz in with the word Debbie. Marion, if it's you, buzz in with your name, Marion, okay?
Okay.
Should we check the buzzers?
Yeah, test them out, ladies. How do your buzzers sound?
Debbie. Marion.
Very good. All right. Very good. This is going to be I predict a very, very close race. I predict that. Again, this is for Harry Connick Jr. tickets, and so we play this game, Junior's Farm. Every answer from the 1st to the 10th has a junior somewhere in the answer. Here goes. Question number one, ladies. Don't forget, buzz in with your names. On a fateful episode of All in the Family, Archie Bunker asked this singer if he took cream and sugar in his eye. Marion?
Marion. Sammy Davis Jr.
is correct for 100 points. Marion, you lead 100 to nothing. We now go to question two. It's worth 200 points. He has become one of Hollywood's highest paid actors by portraying both Sherlock Holmes and Iron Man.
Marion.
I heard Marion first. Marion, go ahead.
Robert Downey Jr.
Absolutely correct. Marion, you lead by a score of 300 to nothing. We now go to question three. It is worth 300 points.
Debbie,
if you get this right.
Debbie, check your button or your buzzer.
Debbie?
Yeah, okay. It's working.
I just
it's working.
Make sure it's working.
All right. Okay. If you get this right, though, Debbie, we're tied up at 300 apiece. Right. Here goes. Question three, worth 300. This former Baltimore Orioles shortstop holds Major League Baseball's...
Debbie?
Cal Ripken Jr.
Absolutely right. Nicely done.
And now it's a tie score. Holy
it's
gosh.
It's anybody's ball game. There's fake applause. All right. You have 300, Debbie. Marion, you have 300. One of you will take a commanding lead with question four. It is worth 400 points. Here goes. This Academy Award-winning actor currently plays the title role in The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Debbie.
Debbie, go ahead.
Cuba Gooding Jr.
Absolutely right,
wow.
Debbie. You're now in the lead. 700, but Marion, you're very close with 300.
Marion, try your buzzer. I haven't heard it recently.
Marion.
Okay. It's still working. All buzzers are still working. All right, Debbie, as we mentioned, you have 700. Marion has 300. Question 5, I'm sorry, question, what was the last one? 400? So there, 500 on this one. Here goes, for 500 points, question 5. Much like his NASCAR Hall of Fame father, Junebug, as he is affectionately known, has proven himself to be one of auto racing's finest.
Wendy!
Marion.
Marion, go ahead.
Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Marion, you lead with 800 to Debbie's 700. It is extremely close. Anyone's game. Question 6 is now worth 600 points. Are you both ready?
Ready.
Huey Lewis sued this singer, claiming that the Ghostbusters theme was heavily influenced by his music. Who are you going to call? An attorney.
Wendy.
Wendy,
come on.
You can't answer. You can't answer. I can't give you points. Really quick, one more time, for 600 points, Huey Lewis sued this pop singer claiming that the Ghostbusters theme was heavily influenced by his music. Who are you going to call? An attorney. Ladies, either of you? No. Wendy, what was it?
Ray Parker Jr.
Ray Parker Jr.
Oh.
Wendy, all of a sudden, you're a close third.
Excellent.
You could walk away with Harry Connick Jr. tickets.
Wouldn't that be a hoot
that
if neither
be,
of these
well, our
girls
legal
win.
Department wouldn't think so, but yes, it would be. All right, question 7 is worth 700 points, ladies. Let's quickly review our scores. Marion, you're in the lead. You have 800 points, only 100 more than Debbie. This would be a big lead for either of you. Question 7, 700 points. Here goes. His wife starred on TV's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and his father starred on TV's Chico
Marion.
And... Marion?
Freddie Prinze Jr.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. Marion, you now have a 1,500-point lead over Debbie's 700. However... Question 8 is worth 800 points, which means, Debbie, if you get it, we're tied up one more time. For 800 points, here goes. On August 31st, 1990, this young Seattle Mariner and his dad became the first father and son teammates.
Debbie?
Ken Griffey Jr.?
Whoa, absolutely right.
Boy, Debbie, you're good with the sports ones.
Absolutely right. Debbie, you have 1,500 points. God. Marion, you have 1,500 points. There are two questions left.
Oh, my God.
Just
look at this.
Just two questions left. Here goes. This is question 9. It is worth 900 points, ladies. Good luck. Ready? His father was a Cuban band leader. His mother was television's first lady.
I heard the meh first, so I'm going Marion. I heard Marion first.
Marion, go ahead. What is your answer?
Desi Arnaz Jr.
Desi Arnaz Jr. is absolutely right. You have 2,400 points. Debbie, you're down by 900. The last question is worth 1,000 points, which means, Debbie, if you get this right, you win. Marion, if you get this right, you win.
I can't stand
if
this.
If nobody gets this right, Wendy will have a heart attack, and Marion, you will still win by virtue of the score right now.
This is like a shootout with the Hawks.
It is like a we're down to that.
Holy moly.
We're down to that. All right, question 10. Again, Marion, you lead 2,400 to Debbie's 1,500. So far, out of the nine questions together, you guys have answered eight of the nine. I'm confident one of you will get this, but which one? Let's find out. Question 10. Ready, ladies?
Ready.
Yes.
He spent nine seasons playing Inspector Louis Erskine on television's The FBI, a Quinn Martin production.
Oh, Debbie.
Debbie?
If you get this, you deserve it. Because who knows this?
I know it.
Debbie knows it. We got to give it to her.
Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.
Who is it, Debbie?
Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.
Debbie, that is correct. You are our winner by 100 points. It is Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. on the FBI. A Quinn Martin production.
You whipped that out, sister, the last second.
I pulled that out of the box somewhere.
Boy, did you ever. Did you ever. Debbie, congrats to you. But first, Marion, we're going to get you a prize of some sort.
Marion, here's what we have for you. First of all, great job, Marion. I love Bill's scoring because it really keeps it very exciting till the last second.
Absolutely.
Marion, we're going to set you up with a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can order online at loumalnatis.com. And if you hang on, we will set you up with that Lou Malnati's pizza.
Boy, you both played great, but well done, ladies.
And
thank you.
And Debbie, you're going to see Harry Connick Jr. and gaze
thank
into
you.
Those beautiful eyes and listen to the swooning sounds of Harry Connick Jr. May 18th, Chicago Theater. It's presented by Jam Productions. So hold on, and thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Take care, ladies. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You are
it
so
came
good.
Wide.
If
well,
somebody
thanks.
Is not listening and doesn't snatch you away to host a game show.
Game Show Network, I hope they're listening. Well, thank you. I just think you should always win by knowing anything about Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. That has to pay off for somebody, and it just did for Debbie. So
I
good
was
for her.
Stumped for a moment, and then I remembered the hair. He had great hair.
Didn't he have great hair?
Totally.
The father of Stephanie Zimbalist, by the way.
Yep.
An actress who has I don't know where she is.
Where was Ephraim Zimbalist Sr.?
I don't know where he was.
Ephraim.
I don't know where he was. That's a good question. We should find him.
If you can answer that, I'll get you tickets to see Harry Connick
Jr. I don't know where
Jr.
he was. I sadly do not know.
If you did not win tickets from Jam Productions to go see Harry Connick Jr., May 18th, Chicago Theater, you can get them now. They went on sale this morning at 10 a.m. Chicago Theater's box office. Ticketmaster.com or by calling 800-745-3000.
All right. Thanks to everybody who is playing along at home. We'll take a quick break. We have more show for you ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I like when things are solved, Bill.
Sure, of course.
It's hard for me to sleep when things are left undone. And a top terrorist suspect in the Paris attacks has been caught in Brussels. And we go live to London right now. ABC News correspondent Tom Rivers is standing by. Hi, Tom.
Hey, guys, how are you?
We're good. This is big news. The top terrorist was caught, and reports say he has been wounded. Is that true?
Yeah, the police say he was shot in the leg, and, you know, that's good. And the hope is, the authorities hope that he will talk, maybe not initially, but at some stage talk, and expand upon the network of ISIS, his contacts, influence, all of those things. So, yes, a very good day indeed, although it's taken just over 4 months to get here.
Yeah. Tom, if you could, because I don't want to mispronounce his name, give us the name pronunciation and what we know about him so far.
Yeah, Salah Abdeslam. And he's a French citizen, but born and raised in Brussels. His parents came over from Morocco. And there's kind of a large North African community in this Molenbeek neighborhood of Brussels, northern part. And it's interesting, this particular, you know, they found the fingerprints from him in a southern suburb on Tuesday. This particular raid today took place literally yards away from the family home in Molenbeek. So a very tight-knit area. And it really begs the question that, Lordy, it looks like he had a heck of a support system because he's able to just hang out and find safe homes in Brussels over the past, four months.
Well, it looks like he had a lot of bravado, too, to be so close to the family home. You would think that you would wander a little farther away as to not to be caught.
Well, I think, we haven't nailed it down yet, but if he was, in fact, one of the two that escaped on Tuesday after there was a gun battle with police then, he probably didn't have a whole lot of choices, and for whatever reason, this might have been the only option, and yes, it was literally back to his old neighborhood.
Do we know much about any terrorist affiliations he's had in the past at this point in time?
Most of these guys, and looking at the individuals that killed themselves in Paris in November, had criminal records, but more light kind of criminality. Not heavy-duty stuff, but whatever. There seemed to be a heck of a radicalization process going on, for instance, in Brussels, and certainly in parts of Paris as well, to turn these guys.
All right, so Salah Abdeslam was wounded and detained in Brussels. He is the suspected top terrorist in those Paris attacks back in November 13th. Any other people found in that place of residence? Are they still trying to get anyone else out, or have they found just one person there?
Yeah, they said there's another person that is wounded, and eyewitness accounts. They're holding a presser right now, and they may have answered this one. But there's another individual that was spotted in a white hoodie that was being put into an unmarked police car. So maybe that person is in custody as well. But we'll find out shortly on that score. But they say that a second person certainly was wounded.
I don't know what the process is like exactly, Tom, but now that they have him, how long do we expect it to take until this would go to some sort of trial?
Oh, this will go pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Fairly quickly, because this is a very special case.
Yeah.
And they've been chasing this guy for a long period of time. Think back to just after the attacks in Paris, he got to the border. It was before they had names and people to look out for, so he passed his papers over, his documentation. They said, go on through. So he went into Belgium, and the trail went cold at that stage of the game. But, yes, he was the one who rented a car that the team out at the stadium, the France National Stadium up in the northern part by Charles de Gaulle, had used. Also, his name was on a rental car down at the Bataclan Theater as well. So specifically, was he a facilitator? Somebody like that. Remember, there was also a suicide vest that was discarded considerably after the fact. They found it. Was that his? Question mark. We don't know. Did it not go off? Did he decide not to use it? Whatever. But there's going to be a slew of questions.
All right. Yeah, it took us 4 months, but the bottom line is we got him. And
that's good news.
That's totally good news.
The reaction out of Paris right now, Tom, do we have that yet?
Yeah, well, again, France Hollande is in Brussels right now. They're talking about the migrant problem there. It's a crisis meeting, but he's popped out of that summit, and he's saying, yes, it's very good news indeed, without going again into the intelligence details, saying that, yes, there was something that tipped off the authorities, because this was a joint French and Belgian operation, police operation. So they cottoned on to something, and maybe a phone communication, who knows, a text, whatever. But they were working together to get this guy as quickly as they possibly could.
And how far is it? Isn't Brussels sort of close to Paris?
Yeah, it's very close. It's like an hour on the train. So it's very close indeed.
So he didn't go very far.
He did not go very far. He really didn't. And a fairly young guy, right? Is he somewhere
26.
In his mid-20s? Yeah, 26. Yeah.
26, yeah. I guess the thinking is as well, would you? And again, there were stories, maybe he's gone to Syria, whatever. Might be, in his mind, was wise if he had this support structure to stay, fairly close to home and in a safe house and to keep a low profile. And maybe at some stage try to venture out, but we'll find out all those answers in the coming days.
Tom, we appreciate it. We appreciate the report. Have a great weekend.
You too, guys. Take care.
Thanks so
much.
Tom
Rivers of ABC News filling us in. Yeah, he does a nice job, doesn't he? Telling us about the capture of Salah Abdeslam one of the chiefs, well, you have to say suspect still at this point, in the Paris attacks of last year that killed, I want to say, 130 people, roughly 130 people. So that's very, very good news coming out of Brussels today. We will take a quick break, and then we have a little bit more for you before Ro and Anna take over. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We don't have a whole lot of time, but this is a story that certainly warrants some attention. Would you think that if you put something on Facebook or posted a comment on somebody else's Facebook page, it could get the attention of the Secret Service?
Well, I guess it depends what you put, but no, I don't think they're Facebooking.
You wouldn't think,
I'm
right?
I'm not friends with them or anything, so why are they looking at my feed?
True. You did not accept the friendship request from the Secret Service? Listen to this story. Tell me what you make of this. To be honest with you, I'm somewhere in the middle on this. Here's the story. A Columbus, Ohio man got a visit from the Secret Service after making an inflammatory remark on Facebook last week. Here's how it started. The original post said this: Hillary and Bernie, Sunday at OSU. That was the original post. It was a private account that was on March the 7th. That, for people who don't know, OSU is Ohio State University.
Okay, so there's nothing wrong. They're just promoting where they're going to be.
That part is fine. That part is fine. That's what somebody puts: Hillary and Bernie, Sunday at OSU. The post got the attention of a man named Gary Berry.
That's a made-up name.
He is
if
a
I
Facebook
ever heard
friend
one.
And the front man for a sugary cereal from Kellogg's. He jokingly replied, "Where do I send the bomb?"
Okay, that's not funny.
It's not funny. His comment didn't go unnoticed by other people responding to the news that both Democratic presidential candidates would in fact be coming to Columbus for a CNN debate that took place last Sunday. The next day I thought about it, but I was like, hey, it's the internet. Once it's out there, it's out there. So I didn't think no more about it till Wednesday, said Barry, not using the best of grammar. But it was no laughing matter to the Secret Service. Someone contacted them about the post, and an investigation was launched. And then two armed agents knocked at Barry's door, ready to talk to him.
Hey, Barry. Gary Berry.
Hey, Gary Berry. I received a phone call from my son saying that there would be two gentlemen at the door from the Secret Service, and I thought he was kidding, but he wasn't, and they actually
waited.
They
don't kid, can I tell you?
The Secret Service.
They don't have much of a sense of humor.
Very, very seriously. Very seriously. Barry said that the agents questioned him and his wife for about 30 minutes. The agents knew everything about him, everything about his family, even his father, who was a firefighter. They were asking me if I were a racist, if I was anti-Muslim, and do I have any thoughts of suicide or thoughts of assassinating the vice president or the president, said Barry. WCMH, that's a local TV station, contacted the United States Secret Service officers in Columbus. They confirmed that there was an ongoing investigation in regards to the comment, which was made by Gary Berry. They also admitted to questioning him on Tuesday. Jonathan Shuck, resident agent in charge, said it is standard procedure for social media threats against the president and against presidential candidates. It's a chargeable offense with a penalty of up to 5 years in federal prison. The agents left Barry with some sound advice. They said, watch what you say on Facebook and even spread the word as soon as they left, said Barry. All right. You tell me, is that warranted or not warranted? Because I would make the argument that if something happened, now in this case, as we've learned, Gary Berry is just a fun-loving citizen who likes to make idle bomb threats. But let's say something horrible had happened.
Well, they have to check him out.
You have to check
him
out.
They have to check him out.
Right?
And I have to interrupt you because Adam LaRoche of the Chicago White Sox has made a statement.
Oh, he has. All right.
This from ChicagoTribune.com. Adam LaRoche will walk away from baseball after what he called, quote, a fundamental disagreement with White Sox executive vice president Kenny Williams over his son's time in the clubhouse. In his first comment since announcing his plans to leave the team on Tuesday, LaRoche said in a statement today that he was first asked by Williams to significantly scale back his son's time with the team and then told not to bring him to the ballpark at all.
Oh.
That's what Adam LaRoche is saying.
Oh. No, wait, is that a new development? Because I don't know that I've heard that part of it before.
Well, this is his statement. So this is what Adam LaRoche is saying. All we just know what we heard. Adam had not commented.
Yeah.
But he is saying, you know, initially he was asked by Williams to significantly scale back his son's time with the team and then told not to bring him to the ballpark at all. Drake LaRoche, 14, had a locker at the cell and Camelback Ranch and frequently was in the clubhouse before and during games. LaRoche's statement contradicts comments from Williams, who said Wednesday that he asked LaRoche to dial it back to less than 50% of the time.
Right. But now he's saying in this latest statement, he told him at first, let's cut this down a little bit, and then at some point just said, we don't want him there at all? Is that what he's saying, Adam LaRoche?
Yes.
Yeah?
At first he was said, I have the exact statement, but it's kind of long, and I don't know how much to read here. Do we have to take a break?
No, I think we're okay, break-wise.
All right, the full statement. Do you want to hear the full statement?
It's
long, I can give you some of it.
All right.
He tweeted it. Adam LaRoche tweeted this. Given the suddenness of my departure and the stir it has caused in both the media and the clubhouse, I feel it's necessary to provide my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
This is Adam LaRoche via Twitter. Over the last 5 years, with both the Nationals and the White Sox, I've been given the opportunity to have my son with me in the clubhouse. It's a privilege I have greatly valued. I have never taken it for granted, and I feel an enormous amount of gratitude toward both of those organizations. Though I clearly indicated to both teams the importance of having my son with me, I also made clear that if there was ever a moment when a teammate, coach, or manager was made to feel uncomfortable, then I would immediately address it. I realize that this is their office and their career, and it would not be fair to the team if anybody in the clubhouse was unhappy with the situation.
All right, now, but the phrase, I would address it, is kind of vague.
Well, I think he means that he would want to be told, and then he would figure it out from there.
Okay.
Or would say, too bad, that's what I want to do. I mean, he could address it in any way.
Yeah.
Fortunately, that problem never developed. Again, this is Adam LaRoche's words via Twitter. He said, you know, if anybody had a problem with my son, if they were uncomfortable, I would immediately address it. I realize that this is their office, their career. It would not be fair to the team if anybody in the clubhouse was unhappy with the situation.
Right.
Fortunately, that problem never developed. I'm not going to speak about my son Drake's behavior, his manners, and the quality of a person that he is, because everyone knows that I am biased. All of the statements from my teammates, past and present, should say enough. Those comments from all the people who have interacted with Drake are a testimony to how he carries himself.
Was that a factor in this until just now? Did anybody ever say the reason we don't want this kid around the clubhouse is he has poor manners? I don't think that ever came up, did it?
No, but he's just trying to say his kid's
a good kid. He's a good kid. All right. But I think we assumed that he was a good kid. I don't know why. I mean, I guess you want a reinforcement if you're making a final statement about this.
Yeah, I have a little more. It's kind of long, but this is interesting. Adam LaRoche making his first comments about his son, Drake LaRoche, and he walking away from the White Sox. He says, prior to signing with the White Sox, my first question to the club concerned my son's ability to be part of the team. After some due diligence on the club's part, we reached an agreement. The 2015 season presented no problems as far as Drake was concerned. My bat and our record are another story. With all of this in mind, we move toward the current situation, which arose after White Sox VP Ken Williams recently advised me to significantly scale back the time that my son spent in the clubhouse. Later, I was told not to bring him to the ballpark at all.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I expressed my displeasure toward this decision to alter the agreement we had reached before I signed with the White Sox. Upon doing so, I had to make a decision. Do I choose my teammates in my career, or do I choose my family? The decision was easy, but in no way was it a reflection of how I feel about my teammates, manager, general manager, or the club's owner, Jerry Reinsdorf. So his problem is with Ken Williams.
I think so.
The White Sox, he goes on, and this is about it. Adam LaRoche taking to Twitter with his announcement or his statement. He goes on to say, the White Sox organization is full of people with strong values and solid character. My decision to walk away was simply the result of a fundamental disagreement between myself and Ken Williams. I understand that many people will not understand my decision. I respect that. And all I ask for is that same level of respect in return. I live by certain values that are rooted in my faith, and I'm grateful to my parents for that. I have tried to set a good example on and off the field and live a life that represents these values. As fathers, we have an opportunity to help mold our kids into men and women of character with morals and values that can't be shaken by the world around them. Of one thing I am certain, we will regret not spending enough time with our kids, not the other way around.
All right, so it's hard. He's already he's made it so it's hard to argue with anything that he just said. Who would
fault
say,
him for doing this? Right. But that's not the issue.
It's not the issue because, as we said earlier, let's say even a handful of teammates say, "Oh, you know what? Adam LaRoche has brought his son. I've got three kids, so I want to bring my kids." And then another player goes, "I got two kids. I want to bring them.
What about my daughter? What about my dog?"
Then what happens?
You got a party,
right? Right.
Let me just finish this, and then we got to get into a commercial break so we can talk to Roe.
Yes.
At every level of my career, says Adam LaRoche via Twitter, the game of baseball has reinforced the importance of family to me. Being at my father's side when he coached, playing alongside my brothers as a kid and as an adult in the big leagues. Likewise, it has been great to have my son by my side to share in this experience as I played. In each and every instance, baseball has given me some of my life's greatest memories. This was likely to be the last year of my career, and there's no way I was going to spend it without my son.
Could he have really written this on his own? Because this sounds like something that a screenwriter wrote. This is as flowery and beautiful. It's, you know, it's the father and son game of baseball, and it's passed down from my dad and now my son. It just, I mean,
it gets more beautiful.
It gets more beautiful.
Only three more paragraphs here, people, but I think this is interesting.
Go on.
Baseball has been very, very good to me.
Does he say that?
No. Again, Adam LaRoche via Twitter. Baseball has taught me countless life lessons. I've learned how to face challenges, how to overcome failure, how to maintain humility, and most importantly, to trust that the Lord is in control and that I was put here to do more than play the game of baseball. We are called to live life with an unwavering love for God and love for each other. These are lessons I try to teach my kids every day. I truly am blessed to have been granted each of those experiences. Thank you to all of my previous managers, past teammates, and friends across the league for making these past 12 years such a wonderful journey and for providing me with memories that I will never forget, especially the ones with my son by my side.
Wow.
And his final paragraph, I will leave you with the same advice that I left my teammates. In life, we're all faced with difficult decisions and we'll have a choice to make. Do we act based on the consequences or do we act on what we know and believe in our hearts to be right? I choose the latter.
Wow. Will Father and Son Pizza pull their sponsorship from White Sox games? Do you think that's what's going to happen? I do. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Roe and Anna have planned for you next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.